first move to order for the Champaign County Board. This is our first legislative budget hearing. Time is 6:03, Monday, August 27th, 2012. Please turn off your cell phones and put them on silent. I should do that too, I guess. Roll call, please.
Alex. Ammons. Anderson.
Here.
Binzel. Berkson.
Here.
Beth.
Here.
Carter. Coart. Ezri.
Here.
Holderfield. Jane.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Kibler.
Here.
Kurtz.
Kurtz.
Langenheim.
Here.
Maxwell.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michaels.
Here.
Osier. Mitchell. O'Connor.
Here.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richard.
Here.
Rosales. Schrader.
Here.
Alex.
Here.
Weibel.
Here, we have a quorum. Seek approval of the agenda and the addendum.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Betts, seconded by Who seconded it? Do we need a second?
Second.
Followed by Ms. Petrie. Just I'll point out the rep from the Champaign County Board of Health is not here. We're not making them time, so we'll skip A, then insert them whenever it's appropriate when they get here. So we'll start out with RPC, etc. Anything else? Okay, approved. Approved. Motion carries. Also on the desk, you have a light blue agenda. That's a pressure version for Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
Yes, Mr. James.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. We'll start out the budget presentation. First is RPC, Head Start GIS Consortium, and USDA loans. So I believe that Cam Moore is going to do this, or Ben?
Good evening. My name is Cameron Moore. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. Also with me tonight is Betty Murphy. Betty is the Chief Operating Officer of the Regional Planning Commission. We're going to take a few minutes tonight and try to give you both an overview and walk you through at least a few details of what I'm sure those of you that have been on the board know, and those that are new to the board are finding out is a fairly complex budget at RPC. And then we'd be happy to try to answer any questions that anybody has. So let me just start out giving you kind of a basic overview of the RPC budget. For the upcoming fiscal year, we are projecting revenue and expenses about $20 million, so it's a fairly large budget. Also mentioned it's a complex budget. That $20 million actually accommodates over 105 different active departments. And when I use the term departments, think funding sources. So we about 105 different sources of funding that we receive, each of which has their own reporting requirements, fiscal years, et cetera. So it becomes a fairly complex challenge to manage all the revenue, comply with all the reporting requirements and outcomes that are required for the funds we receive. Federal and state grants account for about 85% of that $20 million budget that we project for next year. About 65% of our expenditures we anticipate will be salary and fringe benefits. Obviously, the rest of it, other expenses. It's important to note that a couple of our programs have a significant pass-through component. So we receive a lot of money, but we pass that through to people in the community that those funds are intended to assist. also want to mention that when you understand that 85% of our budget comes from state and federal contracts, this is our best guess right now as to what this budget's going to look like next year. What do I mean by that? Well, there's two things that have happened recently, one that is sort of good from a budget perspective for us and one that we think could be bad. Recently, the Congress passed, there won't be a federal budget on October 1st, first of all, which is the new federal fiscal year. What Congress has done is passed a six-month continuing resolution. That six-month continuing resolution provides funding for federal programs through next March, so it gets us well past the election. In that particular continuing resolution, most of the programs that we received funding from did fairly well. There's some modest cuts here and there, nothing terribly significant. But the other thing that's going to happen before March, those of you that follow these things, is this thing called sequestration. This is part of the budget deal that was done. There are scheduled cuts that will be implemented by January 2nd if some type of new debt limit deal and budget deal is not reached. So on the one hand, we've got something that says we're probably in pretty good shape, at least for the next 6-8 months, and we've also got this looming deadline of January 2nd. So we've put this budget together with our best guess as to what's going to happen, but I'm not sure any of us can predict whether we're going to make it through January 2nd or not. And if we don't, we're anticipating cuts probably in all of our programs, somewhere in the tune of 8-12%. But again, it's going to vary from program to program. So I just think it's important to kind of put that in perspective because there's a lot of uncertainty here. I wish I could tell you what's going to happen over the next 6 months, but unfortunately I'm not in a position to do that. What I did want to mention is in 2013, our upcoming year budget, we also expect that our administrative expenses will stay at around 7% of our budget. We've been at that number for the last 2 or 3 years, and actually that administrative cost as a percentage of our budget has sort of slowly been edging down over the last 5 years, and we expect it to stay somewhere around that 7%. It's important to note that with these state and federal contracts that they do establish maximums in what you can use for administrative costs. The federal maximum is 15%. The state maximum is 20%. We're at 7%, so we're well below both the maximums for both the state and the federal level. Now, I mentioned some uncertainty. One of the things that we do know is going to happen next year, which you do not see in the budget before you tonight. Effective October 1st of this year, so in a little bit over a month, the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission is scheduled to assume the role of grant recipient, fiscal agent, and administrator of the federal workforce development programs here in our region. When I say our region, we'll actually be in four counties, Champaign, Ford, Piatt, and Iroquois counties. We are still working through the financial aspects of that transition. We will be bringing budget amendments to the county board both for this year and also for next year, probably within the next couple of weeks, once we just have a little bit better understanding of what needs to be in those budget amendments. What I can tell you about that program is that the base grant for that base funding is about $1.9 million a year. There are four supplemental grants that are not necessarily guaranteed from year to year that take that up to about $2.5 million per year. So there's basically five different funding sources there that we'll have to deal with. And again, you should be seeing budget amendments in the near future regarding that. At the time we put this budget together that we're bringing to you tonight, we were still very early in the discussion phases about moving forward on the workforce development, so that's why that's not included. I'm sure one of the things you're most interested in is how RPC's budget has a direct impact on the county. I'm going to ask Betty Murphy if she could walk through some of the specific items and how those will impact the county budget, and then we'd be happy to answer some questions.
Sure. Each of you should have gotten a brief memo from me about the specific budgetary impacts related to Champaign County funding for the RPC, and I attached a little spreadsheet showing the listing of those contracts, and I'd like to go through each of those. The first one is the Champaign County planning contract, which is budgeted at $71,922, which represents just slightly less than a 2% increase from last year. This budget will support the long-term planning functions that have been identified by the county and their priorities. Membership services has been budgeted at $21,640, which represents a 6.3% decrease from last year. This is because the population, based on the 2010 census data, county population in the unincorporated areas has declined, and our membership dues are based on a base fee and then a per capita. So the membership fees actually declined 6%. Senior services has been budgeted at $22,248 with a 0% increase. This will support over $100,000 that we can leverage in state and local funds for senior services programming in the county. QOTS funding has been increased 5% out of the highway budget at $27,598. This will support over $600,000 in federal and state funding for transportation planning, engineering, and research projects in the county. Champaign County support for court diversion is budgeted at $161,000 with $26,000 in additional support for the Mental Health Board to provide expanding juvenile court diversion services through mediation. This has been an effective program, and the priority seems to be expand this and include additional clients. So that will support over $230,000 that we have to leverage our court diversion strategies. The police training grant is budgeted at the county match is budgeted at $7,334 from the Sheriff's Department. That will support over $400,000 in state funding for law enforcement and corrections training throughout the county. The GIS project is budgeted at $255,790, which now includes, we've bundled the assessment mapping work into the GIS consortium budget, so it's easier to budget, easier to track and report on, and also $93,056, which is for specifically identified GIS special projects that the county has identified. So overall, these are the specific county budgetary impacts in the RPC, and as Cam mentioned, 90% of our budget or more is all federal, state, and local contracts. So these are specific to Champaign County funding. And we'd be glad to take any questions.
I have one. Betty, you don't know the overall changes here, do you? On the page you just described?
What is the overall?
Overall increase.
You know, I didn't do the overall. I did it by project, so I could get back to you with that.
I'd do it too.
Because each of the sources of revenue, some of these, for example, the court diversion is from the public safety tax, the GIS is from the recorder's fees, QOTS comes out of the highway budget, the planning, membership, and senior services are out of general corporate. And that's probably why I did it separately, but I'll be glad to get back to you on that.
No, sorry, Ms. Quisenberg.
Yes. Could you just summarize for us how many individuals the court diversion and the mental health board
You know, I don't have that number, and I'd hate to make one up and give it to you. It's a significant number of kids, but I don't have that with me tonight.
And do you mind if I go deeper into this question?
Sure.
I was curious. I'm looking at the police training. Maybe I'm in the wrong. Sorry.
You know, in the wrong year, odd or even, but page 81. I noted that the original amount for 2012 was listed at $218,000, but the projected is only $124,000. Is there a story behind that?
Again, with the police training grant, as with all of our other grants and contracts, you notice on each of them they're titled even and odd years.
Mm-hmm.
So this one crosses from July of 11 through June of 12. So the actual staff time that would be charged there, again, our staff charge is based on actual hours. So we Our training coordinator, one of our positions, has been vacant for several months, and so our expenditures in 12 are going to be less than they are, 11 rather than 12. And then Department 749, which is the flip department, will see accelerated spending because we crossed two fiscal years within the county year.
Okay. And there's no issue. I noted that the revenue is almost exactly what you thought it would be. There's no issue with that carryover.
No, there isn't an issue with that. And we attach a fringe and an overhead rate to all of our salaries, so revenue and expenses are never going to be equal in any of these individual departments because we attach a fringe benefit rate and an overhead rate to recapture our administrative costs and our fringe costs to all of our grants. And it's because we're grant funded.
All right, thank you.
Deb, you have a question. Be better find a microphone.
Just a clarification to one of Mr. Quisenberry's first questions. The number of clients served for court diversion is on page 86 for fiscal years 11-12 and anticipated for 13.
Thank you.
If you have any other questions at this time, Mr. Kirk.
Thank you. Cameron, I know that we have an economic development loan program.
Yes, actually four of them.
It seems that, let me put it this way, can you give me a little bit of an overall view of where we stand on that? I know there's been some defaults, some problems in that area, obviously because of what's been taking place over the last couple of years, but can you tell me how much money is out, where we stand on how much money the defaults have cost?
Yeah, I can give you some rough numbers. We currently have probably about $6.5 million among the four loan programs that are currently loaned out. I would say that over the last 3 years, our losses have probably been somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000. There's two problems we're experiencing with the loan programs. One is that the loans we have are not performing well, and this has really been a phenomenon the last 3 years. And the second part of that, so we're taking losses that normally we hadn't taken. And then the other part of that is we're not making a lot of new loans because the demand for business capital hasn't really come fully back yet. So, frankly, we have some concerns about that because typically I would say we have $7.5 million in loans. We're down to maybe $6.5 million. We actually do have money to loan, but, we have to have clients.
Diane.
Just real quick on the ones that you're trying to collect on. Do you have liens on that property? Or is it not in that situation? It's just...
Every loan is different. Most of our loans are what I would call participation loans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking a fairly small piece of the overall deal,
right.
Maybe 20-30% of the overall financing package. There's a traditional lender in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking 60% maybe.
Mm-hmm.
They usually get the best collateral. Imagine that. And we don't, it's pretty rare for us to actually get a mortgage. What we normally will get is we may get a security interest in some specific pieces of equipment that we finance.
Mm-hmm.
We almost always get personal guarantees, and in extreme cases, we have to go after the individual because of the personal guarantee, because there may not be any value in whatever the business assets are that that we have a security interest in. We do work with the state's attorney's office, and we have been very aggressive in the last 2 or 3 years. We probably have 4 or 5 loan clients right now, for instance, that we have judgments against.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you have a judgment,
right.
It's still sometimes hard to collect.
Mr. Betts.
This workforce grant, could you describe it a little bit? Is it something new to them?
No, the federal government probably for at least 30 years has funded workforce development programs that are delivered at the local level. The furthest back I remember was something called CETA, the Comprehensive Employment Training Act. Then after that it went to JTPA, the Job Training Partnership Act, and probably for the last 15 years at leased, they have funded under something called the Workforce Investment Act. So it's not a new program. Each of those programs funded workforce development. They funded a little bit differently and focused in different areas. Basically, we're just a new administrator for an existing program would be the best way to describe that.
All right, then. Continue, or what else do we
have? Nope.
That's it?
That's it, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I move to the report these.
I'm sorry, I have a question, Mr. Michael. On page four, and you probably answered this already, but the regular full-time employees seems to bounce a bit. 11, it was 2.7 million. 12, it was 3.7 million. Actually projected to be back down to about 2.6 million. And then you're projecting to go back up to 3.3 million. Why is there so much variance there?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear all the questions.
Why is there so much variance?
Well, some of it has to do with timing. Part of it has to do with the fact that under the stimulus bill, ARRA, we ramped up dramatically. Then that money has now gone away. So that was millions of dollars of new money for us and new staff as well. You know, we're now sort of winding down from that. So it's part of what happens, I think, when you survive primarily on grants. You know, you have some good years and you have some bad years.
Thank you.
Further questions? All right, thank you.
Is the report being received and placed on file?
Second by Mr. Langheim. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is the President's agenda. Mental Health Board Funds and Access Initiative. Mr. Peter Casey.
Good evening. I'm Peter Tracy, the Executive Director of the Champaign County Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board. In your packet, there are actually five separate budgets that we have provided. One is for the Mental Health Board, which is specifically that's the primary board that I work for. I actually have two bosses, two boards that I work for. And they're both autonomous and equal, so that makes it a little bit of a challenge from time to time. The Developmental Disabilities Board is the other budget, and one of the questions that came to me today had to do with the impact that I mentioned state funding and the impact of state funding, and the question had to do with was to what extent does that play a part since we don't actually get state funding. And the primary issue for us is the impact that state funding and the state not paying its bills on time has on the providers in our community. We basically have fairly healthy providers, but they're owed great large amounts of money. Like, for example, DSC at one point was the state owed them $2.5 million. They were that far behind. And what's happened in other parts of the state, for example, several agencies in Chicago and McHenry County have actually gone out of business this year. Agencies that were similar to our community elements or our DSC literally are out of business. So that's the big problem for us is how do you deal with use our local funding to address the needs of this community when you really can't count on what's happening with the state government. The other budget that is in there is the Access Initiative. That's a grant that we received from the Illinois Department of Human Services, and it's actually a federal grant, but it goes through the state. And I want to be clear that there is no this grant has no impact at all on county government. This grant pays for itself. I have notified the feds, and my board has told me that we will not front any money for this. If we have a cash flow problem, we will shut it down. So just be clear about that. There is no liability for us on that in that regard. And actually, we had some very difficult discussions with state government this year about the funding, because we were down to where we were almost not going to be able to pay our bills, and we said if we don't get a check by this date, we're done. We got the check. The fourth budget is the drug court program grant, and that is actually based on a memorandum of understanding with Champaign County to manage the funds that come in from the traffic fines, as well as contributions. There's quite a few contributions from private individuals to the drug court, and we also have a federal grant that is tied to that too, a two-year grant, $100,000 a year, that primarily goes to Prairie Center. And then the last major section that you have in front of you are the delinquency prevention grants, or the quarter cent for public safety, that 5% money that relates to delinquency prevention. That is also a memorandum of understanding between our board and Champaign County. That was when we originally took over managing that. There were about 10 agencies that got contracts. We're literally down to one agency that gets a contract now. So we used it in a very focused and controlled way. I think that sometimes if you have that amount of money in that fund is about a little over $200,000. I think it's $220,000 this year. If you spread that out, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 grants, you pretty much don't have much of an impact. So we've really made an effort working with the state's attorney, court services, and our other partners in the juvenile justice area to concentrate that and use that. And actually, I was interested in the question was asked about RPC and the court diversion program. That is the only program we fund with this grant at this point. That program was essentially designed by the juvenile justice system in Champaign County. And Julia Reitz has that set up. Every kid that comes into contact with the juvenile justice system is essentially screened by that and given diversion options. The primary customer, as far as I'm concerned, is the state's attorney, who appears to be very happy with the way this thing is working. Those are the five areas. I wanted to kind of tell you some highlights of what's coming up this year, because there are some interesting things happening. One is that we just worked out an intergovernmental agreement between the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board, and that is intended to keep the two boards operating together under the same administrative structure, which then saves both boards a considerable amount of administration, and it also gives them very good management and some consistency. The other reason for that is that both boards have a responsibility for developmental disabilities services and intellectual disability services. So that intergovernmental agreement has been signed and is now working, and we're implementing that at this point. The Access Initiative, we are in the process now of planning for sustainability. We're going into the fourth year of a six-year grant. This will be the last year of the big money. It begins to wind down in year five and year six. We're working with community partners. The one that comes to mind that I think you've probably seen is the Champaign Community Coalition. The Walk is One effort that was organized by Champaign, the city of Champaign originally, and invited a variety of partners to participate in. And we're a big part of that, and we actually see that as a real strong component of what is going to happen in the future when this grant ends. So that's a part of our sustainability. We're also looking at using match from other, primarily the city of Champaign. They have several neighborhood projects, and then the community coalition can be used as part of our match for the access initiative. So that I think that speaks well of our efforts to try to work with community partners. With regard to juvenile justice, the Parenting with Love and Limits program serves about 220 kids that come into contact with the juvenile justice system a year. This is an evidence-based practice, and also was one that we worked cooperatively with the state's attorney, law enforcement, and the detention center. They actually were the ones that vetted the program when we first looked into it. An interesting sidelight on that is that the city of Champaign, the police department, contributed $10,000 to support the this particular program. And you know, it was a not a lot of money, but I think it's good that when you have other partners in the city actually putting money on the table. As I mentioned, the delinquency prevention grants, that team is called the, we call it the Quarter Center Administration Team, includes the state's attorney, and basically all the decisions for that and how that operates are based on what this team decides. The other area that we speak to, and you probably saw it a lot in my narrative, is the area of specialty courts. We strongly support, for a long time, drug court and the mental health court. In fact, we fund probably, I think, all of the services that are provided to clients with, and that's with mental health board money. For next year, one of the new priorities that we're going to be looking at is wellness for people with serious and persistent mental illness. The issue here is that people who have serious mental illness have a life expectancy of 25 years less than the general public. There's some lifestyle issues. The medications that they take are not real good for your body. So we're looking at working with community elements to institute some wellness activities and programs to help people maybe live a little longer. And actually, there's a federal program now that's called 10 by 10, and their goal is to increase the life expectancy of people with serious and persistent mental illness by 10 years during the next 10 years. So it's a national problem, and we're looking at what we can do with local money here. So I'm open to any questions if you have any questions.
Mr. Butts. The quarter cent, you keep calling it delinquency prevention, and I'm bugged by that, because it is not delinquency prevention. I doubt that particular law. And it is post-detention care and treatment. And it's very important because it's not supposed to be used for prevention. We have lots of prevention money out there. It was about post-treatment.
Well, that's actually the name that has been given to it in the budget.
That is a name that shouldn't be there, because it gets the idea that we can go into schools and prevent things, and that's all well and good, but that wasn't the purpose of that particular act. It was designed so that you would not have repeat offenders in the county detention facility. It was supposed to be aftercare, follow-up with parents, with the community, with the detainee or pre-detainee. So I'm a little disturbed about it that we focus on that way. And it's also never, ever supposed to be used for police or jails or state's attorneys and what have you. I think there's good uses, and I'm not condemning the program, but I am disturbed that it's gone way beyond what it was intended to be used for originally. It may be all well and good, but I have still not seen good, valid independent evidence of anti-recidivism using that money?
Well, I think it's being used exactly as you've just described. As I said, it is the front entrance to the juvenile justice system, and it's designed to divert kids by providing treatment. It isn't controlled by the state's attorney, but she advises and is part of the team and I think that we've made an effort to, that's what PLL is. As I mentioned, the PLL is entirely treatment. That's our evidence-based practice, and it works in collaboration with what RPC does in the court diversion program.
Question. Jen, go ahead.
I think you got diverted a little bit, Peter, when you started to say that what the team was made up of. You mentioned the state's attorney, but then you kind of went into something else, and I think that you didn't mention that probation and whatever, there are about four others, the youth detention center, that they're all represented in that group too.
Yeah, and providers are also. By the way, with regard to recidivism, this fall or early winter, we're going to have the research study of how PLL is done with recidivism will be out. And actually, Scott Sells is going to be coming to town to present the findings of the independent research study that has been conducted. And that it's actually kind of cool because they have a control group of kids that were not involved that they compare it to. So I think you'll be interested in seeing that, Tom.
Ms. Bertram, the microphone.
What about the homeless mentally ill? People are just pretty much non-functional.
Well, that of course is a problem, and many of those people are involved with the Community Elements. Forgot the name of the program now. My brain is gone. The homeless shelter here in town. Time Center. Thank you very much. I'm getting a lot older, folks. I'm sorry. Okay, Mr. Rosales.
Yes, on page 17 of the project initiative, can you explain a little further about the appointments? You have two appointed officials, which are zero, actually, three regular full-time employees at $333,000, but by the year 2013, that amount is to drop to $89,000.
Okay, I'm on page 17.
Page 17, the bottom portion, appointed officials, column.
Mm-hmm.
Second line says three. Is that three regular full-time employees?
No, that's the line item number.
Oh, line item three. So the one underneath where it says 24, that's the line item number for joint department regular employees?
That's correct.
How many employees does the project initiative hire?
Well, actually, there's the project director and the cultural competence coordinator, and those are the only employees of the county. We have spun off all of the other positions to private agencies in the community. Some of them are at Best Interest of Children, and some are at Don Murray Boys and Girls Club. Those are the two primary providers at this point. So they are not county employees. We contract with them to perform those services.
So this is up to a total of, for two employees, 333,000?
I don't see that much.
We left 2011.
Oh, well, in 2011, we had them working for us. If you look at, it was 333 in 2011, and it's now looking, it'll be 89,000 next year. So all of those positions have been spun off to community. The reason for that is that we moved from a planning phase in this grant to a service provision phase, and we do not provide services. We by statute can't provide services, and so they had to be contracted out. Yes.
I was actually on that same page, too. So if I'm looking at this right, it's running about 113 now for the two, if it's regular full-time employee and joint department regular employee.
Yeah, that would be, I guess that's it.
113 for the two. And then my question goes back to you. In the narrative at the top, it says that an increase is anticipated for the agreement. However, when you go to the bottom line, you're showing a budgeted negative of $62,000, and it also seemed like you budgeted less in 13 than you did 12, so I wondered where that increase was coming in at. See where in the narrative it says we anticipate an increase in revenue during 13 as defined by the contract, but yet you budgeted less and you're in the hole in, on page 18. So I didn't understand where the increase was coming from.
Mm-hmm. Give me a second here.
Sorry.
I believe that when we talked about the increase, we have gotten, in fact, we just got a check for some of the carryover money that we, because the thing started late, we've had problems with spending down and doing everything we're supposed to do. And so the carryover money is supposed to be coming in at this point, and that's the plan is being implemented at this point. But
okay, so that's not showing in your 13 budget, although it's in the narrative in the top. Mm-hmm. On page 17, where it says 2012 projected $1,005,000, original $1,005,000, but you're budgeting $1,004,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking at, and yet I see there's supposed to be an increase. And then, so that's when I went to page 18, and I understand salaries are even lower. But even with the cut in salaries and the cut in the budget, we're supposed to be getting an increase, and we're in the hole $62,000.
Yeah,
anticipated.
I apologize. I led you wrong. The 12 projected, the reason that's high is that's where the carryover money comes in. And then in 13, we won't have any carryover money, and that's why it goes down in 13. So that's the difference there. Our carryover money has to be spent before, what is it, October 1 this year.
Is there, if I can ask a follow-up to that, I'm sorry. So the increase, because it's showing the projected and the budget to be the same amount, 12-13, so the increase that you're anticipating based on the narrative is possibly another carryover?
No.
Okay.
Not that I'm...
Okay.
Let me look at... I'm not sure what that means, actually.
Okay.
If I could help just a little bit here. Basically, the budget, the projected budget for fiscal 2012 is estimated by line item at this time. And the likelihood of them actually spending all of that is unlikely. And as you heard Peter say earlier, they're not going to spend money they haven't received. So when we look at 2012 in January or February, you're probably going to see that they ended very close to a zero fund balance, which carries forward into 2013. It's just that when you're projecting, you give yourself some flexibility in what you expect to happen. Some of those line items probably will not expend as much as what is stated in the estimate.
I guess I was just looking for the increase.
And
it's exactly the same across the board. That's what I was looking for. It's, oh, great, increase this next year. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was looking for.
Increase in revenue?
In the bottom. Up in the first paragraph,
mm-hmm.
we anticipated increase in revenue during fiscal year 13 as defined by the contract payment schedule, but will drop lower in 14 and 15 as stated. So I guess that's why I was wondering. We should be out of the hole if we're going to get a little extra this year than we did the year before.
I understand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. I think this is could also be some clumsy language because it says as defined by the payment schedule, and I think what that means is that more money will be in the payments to contracts.
Okay, let's go with Stephanie.
I've got two different sections. I'm sorry.
I've got two different sections, just kind of because I don't understand and would like some clarification. There are just a few line items that I just couldn't quite understand. The stationery and printing, you've got an actual of $195, an access initiative on page 18. The original was six, projected six, but your actual budget's $2,500. Can you tell me why there's such a big discrepancy there?
I'm sorry, which line are you stationary?
Stationary, which is at the very top on page 18.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an actual of 195, original 6,000, projected 6,000, and budgeted of $2,500.
Well, the 6,000 was for last year, or the, uh-huh. the current year, and then the 2,500 is for the coming year.
Okay, so you, in 2011, actually used $195, but you budgeted for higher and originally used in 2012 $6,000?
Well, I'm assuming that that's what it was in 11.
Okay, and so you anticipate a pretty big drop of $2,500
mm-hmm.
because of your supplies that you currently have. And then the next line in office supplies, $12,097. I'm going to assume, and maybe you can clarify, that was getting the office set up. So office supplies of $12,097. And then you had the original of $9,000, again projected $9,000, and then you dropped down to $5,000.
Yeah, the 2011 budget had a higher amount because we were getting set up at that point, right?
Okay. And then on down on line 18, non-employee training seminars.
Yeah.
Your $29,174, of course, you bumped it up to $30,000 and then $30,000 again, and then you're back at the budgeted $25,000. What's the non-employee training seminars for?
Well, part of the requirement of this that the feds have is that you have to have family involvement. So we have a parent group. And so parents, for every one of these conferences that the feds require, we have to send a bunch of parents to, that are involved with the program, and also youth. And so that would be the category of that we'd be talking about there.
So you're actually sending them someplace. They're not getting it through Access Initiative in training for non-employees. Is that correct?
This amount of money here is related to the required conferences that the feds have. We just had one in Florida in July, that we sent 23 people to, I think. And it's expensive. I mean, they go to really nice places.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the federal government for us.
Yeah.
Okay, and then equipment maintenance. I just thought it was kind of a stark contrast, $50, and then we bump it up to $1,000. So it actually, they used a full $1,000 in 12 and then just decided to keep the budget the same.
I imagine that would be the case, yeah.
Just curious. Uh-huh. Okay. And then, again, the conference and training. Are these also the federal guidelines for, because there are some pretty big changes from 52 to 65 down to 20,000.
Yeah.
So this year they're going to go to less training?
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of winding down. I think this one in July was the last really big one that we were required to send a lot of people to.
And then if I could, from the Mental Health Board, or do you want to go to someone else and come back to me? Okay. On page 7, you've got line, it doesn't really have a number, but it's below 90 on page 7, miscellaneous. In actual dollars of 2011, it's $44,093, and then you went to $11,250, projected $20,000, and then you dropped down to $11,100. I guess I would like kind of a definition of what miscellaneous means. That's a lot of money for miscellaneous.
Top of the page.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Very top, okay.
That's the subtotal for all the categories
and
all the line items above.
Okay, all right. I should have added them up. Okay, and so, okay, all right. And then we've got commodities. Is that the same thing that you added all of the lines up on line 44?
That's the total, too.
Is that a grand total?
Yes.
Okay, and then public relations. Could you define for me in 2011, we spent $46,000, and then we bumped it to $50,000, and now we're up to $55,000. Can you just describe for me just a little bit of what that all entails for your public relations, print, media, all of that?
Well, that has to do with our anti-stigma campaigns that we're involved with. There are two major events. One is the Disability Expo, which is at, I think it's a full day kind of an exposition for people with disabilities. It's also, ties into trying to involve non-disabled populations so that there's, more of a feeling of inclusion and being part of community. It also has to do with the other major event that we have is the Roger Ebert Film Festival, where we select films that relate to disabilities, we have a number of activities that have to do with stigma, inclusion, and it could be any of the disabilities that we deal with.
Hey, could you expand just a little bit on exactly what you do through the Roger Ebert Festival? I was just a little surprised. For some reason, didn't realize that there was really any association. That Roger Ebert Fest, exactly. What is it that happens? Are there movies? Are there messages that's been out? Are there PR pieces, postcards?
Well, we get a lot of press coverage of that. We are a sponsor of the film festival. He selects a movie that is specifically related to a disability and the issue of stigma and overcoming disability. So that occurs during the festival. We pass out literature to people that go to the festival related to stigma and inclusion. And then when the festival closes, we have a free community screening of a movie selected by a committee that has a strong anti-stigma positive message related to disabilities.
And do you have anything that you can tie into how this is actually being effective in our community? Is it money well spent? Have you tracked it to determine that?
We're working on that. I mean, we think it's money well spent because we get a lot of it's a very small part of our budget, and that's the anti-stigma issue is a huge national issue that SAMHSA and the feds push. We think it's very important. We are working. We have a lot of community partners involved with it. It's not just us. In fact, for the money that is in the budget for these events, we get a lot of offsets from other contributions from people that, like the expo is almost in, I think about half the budget is people contributing, and also exhibitors that pay money to come to the expo. But we are basically the insurance policy that kind of backs it up. With the festival, we've had varying offsets. We budget $25,000 for the festival, and 1 year we had about $15,000 in offsets of contributions and participation from other sources. I think last year it was like about $8,000. So the idea is, and we have a planning committee that is not just us; it's a community planning committee. I think there's some penetration. We have not had we've not done research on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Alex.
If we can go back to the Access Initiative briefly. I guess first a comment. I recognize that there's no county money going into this, so you may be wondering why we're spending so much time on this. But I would argue that it's important. In fact, I think the county board is obligated to look at whether these funds are being spent effectively, because in a sense this does significantly impact the county's budget in other areas. I mean, to the extent that you can serve these youth and keep them out of the criminal justice system, that's a considerable savings to the taxpayer. So this is sort of a pay me now, pay me later situation. The fact that the feds are providing the money to pay now is great, but I still think we need to sort of satisfy ourselves that this is a program that's being effective. going back a little bit to Diane's, the issue that Diane raised, line item number 92 on the expense side, contributions and grants, is the lion's share, page 18, is the lion's share of the money that is spent on this program, and in fact represents most of the money that comes in, goes out under that line item. Is it safe to assume that that's where these non-employees are being funded? So the services that were being provided by employees internal to the program, so salary lines were lowered, are being provided by outside agencies, and
yes,
they're being paid out of that contributions and grants line item?
Yes, that's the contract line.
Where would one go to find a more detailed breakdown of that line item?
We have it. I mean,
would that be on the available online? Is that in the the Access Initiative budget available, publicly available?
This budget is public.
But this budget has one line item. Is this just a summary, or is the budget?
Give a breakdown of that.
Is the budget on file with the county more detailed than this, or would we have to go to the Access Initiative budget itself? And if so, how would one do that?
Well, the Access Initiative budget looks just like this. If you want to see what the contracts are, I can give you a list of the contracts that make up this money.
It sounds like you have to go see Peter. Is that correct? The question, Chris, is you want to know, like, who's getting what?
I would like to know. Well, it's not, to some extent, I would like to know who's getting what. I'd like to know how any other interested party would go about finding out who was getting what.
Well, with freedom of information, all of our contracts are open. The decisions are made in public meetings, and as I said, we're talking about two contractors at this point. It's the Don Murray Boys and Girls Club and Best Interest of Children.
Okay, so that the entirety of that money is divided among those two.
Yeah.
Those two groups.
It wasn't originally supposed to be that way. I don't know if you remember, but when we started this, the intent was that we wanted to work with some non-mainstream agencies that were a little closer primarily to the African-American community. And we had four agencies that we were working with, and two of them imploded, essentially. And so he's had to pick up the pieces, and Don Moyer has been our, and as you know, they have had problems and have a new executive director. So it's been a difficult thing for Mr. Parsons to carry out what we originally planned when the agencies we were trying to work with haven't been able to make it.
Okay, and going to the fund balance issue, the way I read this is we've got about $900,000 in the first year and basically $1.5 million last year, and estimating $1.5 million for the coming year in revenue. The increase in revenue described in the narrative, have we decided that that's in error? I mean, it looks like we're budgeting for exactly to the dollar, exactly the same revenue next year that we did this year. Is the revenue implying that we'll probably get money above what's budgeted, or is the narrative just not accurate?
Well, I think the narrative is accurate when it's talking about the contracts in comparison to the next 2 years that follow.
But an increase in revenue during fiscal year 13, the dollar, I mean, it's dollar for dollar the same as what's in the 2012 projected budget. The first projected for 2012.
Okay.
I'm just trying, I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm just trying to understand whether what the narrative's saying, we're budgeting for $1.478 million, but we expect we'll get more, or is, do we really expect to get only the $1.474 million?
We expect to get the $1.478 million.
Okay.
The total grant is $2 million a year. 20% of it goes to the state, and 20% of it goes to the University of Illinois to do the evaluation of this project. So, and then the rest of it, the $1.4 million and some is what's left over after the U of I and the state takes their cut.
Okay. And then as to the cash flow, it looks like we spent, the actual projected spending in 2012 is $2 million. So it looks like, the way I read this is at the end of 2011, in 2011 we took in a lot more money than we could spend because it took a while to get the program ramped up, right? So you ended up with a fund balance of $433,000 in the bank at the end of 2011 that hadn't been spent yet. The this is the bottom of page 18.
Yes.
Okay. Then 2012, we were, or it looks like we will be able to spend most of that. That implies we might not be able to spend all of it, but we will spend most of that. That fund balance will be spent down because that was essentially money we should have spent already, but didn't get around to spending until 2012. Is that?
That's why that's why you see expenditures of $2 million.
Okay.
Right.
What? That is, I mean, these agencies that are receiving the contributions of grants, we went from, we're going from 1.422 million in 2012 down to 1.17 million in 2013. Does that mean that those agencies are going to scale back personnel, scale back services, or is this, do we really think that enough of that money will end up not being spent in 2012, be held over into 2013, that the actual expenditures on those line items will be relatively constant from 2012 to 2013?
It is possible there could be some money left over, but the feds have changed the rules on carryover. And now if you have under 25% of the total grant, you can roll it over without applying to do it. If you exceed 25%, you can't. You have to go through the whole process again.
Okay. So do you think that how accurate do you think the 2012 projection of 1.4 million is, and how much less than that do you think we'll actually be able to spend?
I think we're going to be fairly close.
Okay. And in that case, I'll go back to my that I guess validates my question, which is, do we know what the recipients of those? These groups that received $1.4 million in 2012 but are only going to receive $1.1 million in 2013, mm-hmm. Can you speak to how those cuts will be absorbed by those agencies?
There's a couple ways. I know one of them is that there was quite a lot of training that was done in 12. The wraparound program that was ramped up during 12, we had a number of consultants come in, and they were reasonably expensive. And we
training the staff of the group.
Training the staff and also training parents and youth that were, you know, part of the concept of a wraparound is that you use the youth and family representatives to participate in teams to kind of assist the people that are the focus of the service that is being delivered.
I see. And so your argument would be that you're making an investment. This is because I think my initial reaction to that would be training of your staff or training of staff of the member organizations is building service capacity. Training of parents and the students involved in the program is service delivery. But you would argue that those parents will continue to be involved in working with future service recipients?
We would hope that would be the case, yeah. That would be part of the what we would try to do is with sustainability of the project.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to learn about the intergovernmental agreement that will begin doing some saving and administrative costs, so thank you for telling us about that. Thanks, Robin. To begin with, I have some macro comments and questions, and some of my macro comments I hope Ms. Busey will think about for next year's budget time. One of them has to do with the listing of objectives that everybody has in their budgets. Yours have quite a few. And I spent some time this afternoon just randomly looking at last year's budgets and sort of comparing objectives from last year to this year. And again, it was random. But I didn't find much change in objectives. And so it would be nice if there was some cueing for us as we're reading these. Are these objectives carried over from the previous year, or are they new objectives?
Some of them were carried over.
But we don't know that because there's no cueing in the document. I was reading it off of last year's off of last year's website.
Yeah.
And so I see all these objectives, a lot of narrative in some of these budgets, and I see absolutely no metrics. So as I said, mining more on the macro level than the nitty-picking of...
You're talking about evaluation?
Yes.
Well, all I can say is the Access Initiative is probably the most evaluated program. 20% of this budget goes to the University of Illinois. We have two PhD psychologists that lead the team of researchers, plus all kinds of people that are doing interviews of people that are involved. I mean, there's huge research requirements with the grant. PLL...
you did mention
an evaluation.
There is going to be something, but some of these...
I mean, I can't mention everything in the budget.
No, but when I see an objective and I see that it's still here from last year, I do wonder, and I look at the amount of money that's going into programs, it would be very useful, I would think, for all of us to have some sense if this is money well spent, efficiently spent. A lot of this is taxpayer dollars. So, and it is all taxpayer dollars, even if it's grants coming down from the federal and state levels. So I think this would be very useful. And then enveloping that, we have a community justice task force that's functioning in relationship to the jail issue here in the county. And some of what I read, it's really hard to discern as I read the objectives if there isn't some overlap that's going on within these different agencies, and wondering if there isn't some means of efficiency that we can look at in relationship to the expenditures of monies and these extremely tight budget times.
I don't think there's a lot of overlap, because most of the stuff in what you read in my budgets has to do with juveniles, and most of the jail issues are adult issues. The main, you know, we do fund the specialty court thing, which you could maybe say there's some overlap there, but...
Well, the specialty courts are some of the things that are being talked about as alternatives to the jails. Another comment, when we come to a number of employees, we've already heard questions from people trying to figure out how many employees are getting this total amount of payment, so that would also be very helpful for us, so we have just a little bit of a sense of that. And then... what exactly is the funding source for the developmental disability budget?
That's property tax. Mm-hmm. There was a referendum passed in 2004.
And what is the rate right now?
0.10.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Also, Ms. Holderfield, quick, we'll scoot back over. Sorry, Ms. Jeff, we'll get to you.
Regarding the budget for next year, if you would consider, the Mahomet Boys and Girls Club did lose their funding, and it went to the, I believe, the Don Meyer Boys and Girls Club. And so my hope is that...
We still fund them.
You still fund the Mahomet Boys and Girls Club?
They're one of the four groups that get... There's one in Rantoul, and Mahomet gets...
The Mahomet?
$17,800, if I remember correctly.
Is it? Because I had heard that it had been taken...
They have not lost their funding.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Diane, got a quick question?
Yes, sir. Back to page 6-7 on the mental health board. It looks like we're anticipating an increase on the property tax. I don't know that, you know, there's been a lot of assessments redone and things like that, so I don't know if you just took a percentage of what normal is or how you increase that. And then... the bottom line to that, too, is on page 8, it seemed like we were doing really well, getting really tight on the actual expense per capita. For 11 and 12, it went down, and then all of a sudden it jumps 87 cents up to 2109. Increase of expenditures of 180, and your property tax increase is 155. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, when we've tried to be so lean on everything, why we jumped so much.
Those are actually all things that I provide for these budgets,
and the property taxes have been calculated according to the property tax extension limitation law. You will see property taxes at a later presentation, but in these, you're going to see property taxes in some of these budgets. So yeah, the increase is based on PTEL and what is allowed for each of the levies within the county's aggregate levy, and also mental health and DD are separate levies. So they've been calculated exactly according to PTEL. And the actual cost per capita,
yes,
is that's also something that we just base on the total cost for the program that's provided divided by the population in the community. And when this budget goes up, the cost per capita hasn't changed since last, or the per capita hasn't changed since last year. We still have the same census numbers that we did last year, so the cost goes up.
Okay. Well, I guess what I saw was, you know, it kind of bouncing around the $20, $39, and all of a sudden it jumped quite
well,
a bit.
Well, and that part of the reason for that is the historical numbers are based on actual dollars spent, but when we do a budget, we're basing it on what is budgeted to be spent, and you don't always spend the entire budget. So that's part of the reason that that jumps around a little bit. And the population numbers also changed during that time frame based on the census.
Mr. Kibler?
Thank you, Mr. Tracy. My only comment would be just to kind of net this out. So basically, you're looking at, excluding delinquent prevention grants, about a net of $2,000 more expenditures than you did in the last fiscal budget. Is that about accurate?
For which one is it?
I'm just doing the math between all the different budgets we looked at, excluding the delinquency provisional grants, prevention grants, that you're going to net out about $2,000 more expenditures this time around than last time, meaning that spending $2,000 more than we receive, if you will, the net year-over-year budget-wise. Just trying to get a gauge or an estimate over last year's budget.
Well, if you're adding in the Access Initiative as part of that calculation, that really throws everything off. Right?
I believe it nets out at zero because the expenditures match the receivables. So I'm just looking at the net difference, trying to understand what our deficit or surplus will be for this year. And since access equals out, I'm just kind of doing the math and I want to verify with you.
Mr. Maxwell?
Thank you. I had Brian kind of asked the question. It looks like the property tax increase that you're budgeting is around 4%. Is that correct?
Hey, Doug?
Are we budgeting an estimate of around 4% increase in property tax?
Yes, the CPI this year was 3%, and our EAV stayed relatively close to even. It dropped just a little bit.
Thank you.
Ms. Petrie, go ahead.
On page one, under food protection permit, down towards the bottom, the original...
That's kind of above health. They're coming up. We can ask him, but I don't think he knows the answer.
Okay, well, on page 18. How does this work when we're projecting a negative $62,000? I mean, where's that money come from? At the bottom of the fund balance?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that was a point-in-time projection, and as I mentioned, we have no intention of either giving additional money to this project. If it doesn't pay for itself, it goes away. Anything else, Gary? Okay. Ms. Petrie.
Yes, to go back to what Mr. Alex was reflecting on and public domain information about the Access budget. I'm on the Access Initiative website right now, and I see nothing on that website that shows any budgetary information, and this is a federal grant, so I would think it would be most appropriate that this financial information is up on this website.
I really don't have any comment. All I can tell you is that we just had the county audit, and the Access Initiative was one of the major programs that was looked at. We apparently answered all the auditors' questions to their satisfaction, and as far as I know, we're following all the federal guidelines.
Well, they had some questions when they reported to us.
Yeah, they did, but most of the questions they have were things that were beyond our control that related to the state government and how they gave us money.
So they don't say that if you're getting federal money, it should be on the website so the public can see it?
I don't know that requirement. If there is a requirement like that, I'll check on that, Patty. I don't know of any requirement like that.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. Any other questions? Mr. Betts.
The issue that Patty raised regarding the website, Valda raised it once before. This has been asked before, could we put this up on the website at these budget hearings and at other times when you've made presentations? It's been requested at least two or three times by board members. It may not be a federal requirement, but I think it would go a long ways for people not asking the question over and over again.
Okay, Mr. Rosales.
Last one before you leave. I'm just curious, why are we paying interest and finance charges and late charges on certain credit cards? And that's one of the issues that I think that it was brought to us before, that if it's a federal grant, why are we paying our bills on time?
Well, the main reason is that the, like an example of that is the Florida trip last time. We have a bunch of people going, the parents and youth that have never been in hotels for the most part, they lose their receipts. You know, we try to manage it as best we can. Unfortunately, when the bill comes, as you know, when we submit the payment to the auditor's office, we have to have all the receipts and everything. It's just a major headache, and it's very difficult to do. We spend enormous amounts of time trying to track all that, and that's what happens. And the turnaround time, I got to tell you, I'm not real happy with the credit card company because we asked them to increase the amount of money on our limit because we don't have an adequate limit to cover all the expenses of these big conferences. I had to put my own personal credit card up to make sure that we didn't have situations where people would at checkout time be embarrassed because we were over the limit. You know, it is a pain. I don't like it either. And I apologize, but there's not a thing we can do about that.
So you have projected $750 for next year as well.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it's good to project it because it may. It's different people every time, though. It's not the same. It's not the same people.
Okay, any other comments? Ms. Anderson.
I'd just like to comment. I think Ms. Petrie a little earlier said that she appreciated the fact that you're administrating two boards and cutting. I'd like to remind people that the first year of the Disability Board, Mr. Tracy provided a year of administrative from the Mental Health Board, essentially free, so that, you know, we could save those disability funds. And then since that, they've been administrating both boards, which is a saving, actually, and I've appreciated that very much.
I would like to just ask a quick question. In my 11 years here, or 12 years now, this is the only grant that I've ever had the kinds of questions and concerns come up from the county board. Would you like me to give it up? Because, frankly, if you want me to, I'd be happy to do it.
Mr. Betts.
I don't want you to give it up. I think it's legitimate for the county board to ask questions.
No,
that is our function. No one is suggesting that it be given up. But people have had some concerns from day one about the numbers of people who are actually being served by the wraparound, how long it took to get it going, et cetera, et cetera. I think almost everyone on this board really very strongly believes in the idea of wraparound service, of the preventive care, the mental health aspects of this SAMHSA grant.
I know how many times you applied. We all encouraged you to, voted for it. But people are asking perfectly legitimate questions. It is not a question of, do we want to give up the grant? It's, I think we have a job of oversight. And oversight is never comfortable. But the answer is not to say, if you want to know more information, file a Freedom of Information Act request. That was totally inappropriate. This board has, through members, several members have asked for information to be put on the website, and it's not been there. I don't think that those are at all illegitimate questions to be raised at a budget hearing or any other type of hearing. I personally have always voted for this, every step of the way. And I have qualms about how it's been carried out. I have qualms about the leadership of that program, and I'm not speaking of you, but of some of the agencies that have collapsed and what have you. It gives any person in an oversight role natural pause about how that money is being used and whether we're getting the biggest bang for the buck. I hope we are. I want to see the results from the University of Illinois showing that we've had that impact. I hope we do, because I think every child we save and keep out of the long-term system saves potentially millions of dollars. But I don't think we should say, you should in any way come back on us and say, do you want us to give up the grant just because we're asking questions? Because that is how it is built. Right from the start, when we've asked questions over the years on this, is don't ask questions. Well, I'm always going to ask questions until I'm off this board. It is the same concern I have about the youth detention issue for quarter cent. I think there have been some great things that have happened with that money. It's been leveraged. There's been all sorts of good things, but I also think that it's changed over time in terms of its focus. And I don't think this board itself that created that really has acknowledged that that focus has changed. And that's okay. It isn't my money. But I do think that we need to have that kind of discussion. And maybe at the Justice and Public Safety committee meeting of COW, maybe that discussion should take place at some point. But I don't want you to think that at least this member wants to have us give up the SAMHSA grant. I just wanted to make sure it's absolutely effective.
Mr. James.
I guess sort of following up on Tom's comments, Peter, I know you've done a lot of good work. I've seen it. You've worked well with a lot of different agencies, but I'm a firm believer that when things are good, the pats on the backs always go to those at the top because they're the ones that make the final decisions and have to say so. So when things are bad, I think that leadership needs to step up and correct them and needs to take the bull by the horns and say, here's the way we're going to do it. I complain all the time, even at the county level, about how receipts are turned in, and to me, if they're not in, whoever gets reimbursed doesn't get reimbursed. I don't like a lot of excuses. The wills have been out there. I remember you, different times we'd have committees, you talked about the wills already there. We'll just plug in what we need. I respect that. I think you worked very hard on this grant, but I also think when things are falling apart, the person at the very top making the most money needs to take some of the blame.
Ms. Bergson, final comment, question?
Is there any barrier to putting on the website both the financial information and the sort of usage information that comes to the Community Action Project? I think old people are worried about not just the financials, but the usage, and all that information is available. And is there any reason why it can't go up on the board?
I don't think there is, no.
People have been asking for it that long. It seems to know it ought to go.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the County Board of Health. We have a motion to set place on file. Does someone make the motion? Mr. Zoll, second. Mr. Kibler. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Good evening.
Hello. Everybody ready?
the documents she was going to use. This one here is inside the mental health, sorry, inside the cover of the Monday, Wednesday folder. And then you have, down on page one, the budget for County Board of Health. John, go ahead.
Okay, John, I'm John Peterson, treasurer of the Board of Health for, I guess, a number of years now. Can't tell you how many. Let me just give an overview and say that this was, like last year, pretty easy budgeting for us. We have really had a lot of the battles with respect to the priorities of this budget some several years back. What we do is, in the Board of Health, is to take a look at our priorities, which have been pretty well established at this point. And the major agency that we're contracting with is the District Board of Health, Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. And our relationship with them is quite satisfactory at this point. And as those of you that have been here for a matter of years, it hasn't always been that way. Stan can elucidate you in terms of some of his favorite former directors. At this point, our relationship is very good, and what we got as a work product for what the money we had, we're quite satisfied with. There's a lot of ways to do budgets, and I've said this before in those times when we had a lot of controversy. The way that this budget basically was done was the Board of Health set a number of priorities based on our previous work. Obviously, the core is sanitation, sewage and water quality. District came to us with a work product that we could afford within the money that we have, and that makes it easy. In previous years, where we had much more stringent battles, we were getting estimates of a work product that was at least three times greater than we could afford. We're no longer getting that kind of a runaround from the district, and in fact, we're getting a activity level that they fit into their overall staff, and we're getting a charge for those services that we can afford. So this is an incremental budget, as it was last year. In general, it's about a 5.9% increase. A big piece of that increase is grant activity, so our budget goes up, but it's not necessarily coming out of property taxes. There is, of course, an increase within that group that is largely related to personnel. Even despite the 5.9% increase, we're still able to continue to fund the Smile Healthy activity, which has been supported strongly by the county board in past years, and we're going to be able to continue that. It's slightly lower funding level in the past, but still at $45,000. In the past, it was $55,000, and in the very beginning, some 7-8 years ago, it was $150,000. My concern as the treasurer has always been our carryover. We need to be able to have emergency funds if something comes up, and we're always threatened by something coming up. And we're able to maintain our carryover at the same level, at basically the same level that we've had in the past, about 25% of our annual expenditures. That was our target, and Deb Busey has done an excellent job in maintaining that. Bottom line here is that we're within budget, we're getting a good work product, we have a very good relationship with our major contractor, and they're with us.
Questions? Gary?
I'll try it again. On page one, under food protection permits. I noticed we have about a $25,000 to $27,000projected increase over our original budget for permits. How did that happen, and is this apt to recur?
We are doing a better job of collecting the fees. Partly, we do not have in place some projected changes that we're looking at in terms of fines. We do have a half dozen or eight or so of the restaurant entities in town that are chronic abusers, and the district and the board are looking jointly at a fine structure, but that isn't really reflected in the in that projection. There's more activity in that area, and so part of that's what the increase is a result of. There's no increase projected in the fee structure at this time.
If I could, I would just add to that, because I do these projections because these are county numbers. There seems to be a real spike in food protection permits this year. So based on prior years and a trend at this point in time, it looks like this year would generate $120,900 in those permits. But I did not want to carry that forward to next year in case it is an anomaly. So it's possible that next year's revenue is actually under budgeted if that continues forward, but we just weren't sure at this point.
Okay, thank you. May I have one more question? On page 3, under 533.7, professional services, could you give me an example of what those are, what types of services, and not necessarily to whom, but what are those?
Salaries. Staff salaries for the basically for the our services from the public health district.
All right.
Yeah. That's always the big item, of course, is the salary item. Yeah, we don't make any money at this. We literally don't even have a staff member that we're funding any longer.
Hello, Ms. Petrie.
A clarification. You said there's going to be a 5.9% increase in the amount of monies coming to the county health department due to taxes. No, due to taxes, is that correct?
Not all taxes. No, there's some increased grant activity.
Okay, and grants. All right. Okay. So then that leads me to the question I want to focus upon, and that is, why has there been this decline in support for Smile Healthy, especially this year when there's a projection of an increase of 5.9%?
It's a 5.9% increase in the budget, overall budget, not the revenue, but the overall budget.
Oh, it's the budget. Sorry, yeah. I misunderstood.
Right.
Okay.
So it's a pinch. Frankly, last year, and Stan was aware of this too, we were, I think, surprised that it was in, that it remained in this year. And so the public health district worked with us to limit their request for expenditure items such that we could continue to fund this activity at some level. We, I think it was fair to say, did not expect that it would have been funded this year at all.
I see. Okay. And then I have a second question. I'm looking at the objectives on page 4, and I'm looking at objectives 2 and 4, and if those truly are the objectives, how in the world did Cherry Orchard get so out of hand?
Well, that's a good question. The Cherry Orchard situation, I think most of us on the board thought that the district handled that very well when we finally got to the point that we realized we could do something about it.
I concur when people start stepping in, but it looks to me from here that stepping in could have happened earlier. correctly?
Could it have happened earlier? I think you could reasonably make that argument that it could have happened earlier. It didn't because it was a difficult legal situation. It took some development of a legal posture in order to start this. The activity that was undertaken by the public health district on our behalf with respect to Cherry Orchard is really a very limited scope, but we were able to leverage it into a very major enforcement activity.
I do agree with that.
Mr. Curtis.
Thank you. This is not about the budget, but we got you cornered here, so sit tight. As a former restaurant owner, I know that you're working hard on keeping food safe in restaurants. And I know lately there's been a number of closures of some restaurants from the website that I've been monitoring.
I need just a little bit more focus on the mic there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm an old man and I'm having trouble here.
Thank you very much. I'm your generation as well, I'm sure. I don't speak low. Usually I'm heard across town, much less. Talking about posting of inspection reports, where are you on that area? I know it can be a little bit cumbersome because some of those reports can be quite extensive, but I think the public should know when they step into a restaurant whether they're going to go home and have a problem.
That item is basically discussed at every board meeting now. We had a question as to just what model to use, and the food inspection staff were looking at various models from various parts of the country. There was a model ordinance really coming out of the feds that we thought was going to be available to us this summer, and in fact that project was dropped at the federal level, so that we did not get much support for a model from that. So really every meeting that is addressed, we are moving forward on it. It's not just stagnant. It's not a back burner item. But there's the legal requirement, of course, or our intention is not to unfairly accuse restaurant owners of unsanitary conditions, and we need to find a method that the public will understand what we're saying. But the current discussions are putting a notice of violation at the site itself, next to the public health permit, as well as on the website.
If it falls below a certain point number.
A certain number, right?
And certain, you know, you're looking at that, trying to
and there are certain violations that are in and of themselves sufficient to,
yes,
to pull the license for a time.
Okay, thank you.
John, go ahead.
A couple questions, John. And maybe I missed this, so I hate to be repetitive, but on the one of the grants from the Illinois Department of Health, the Vector grant, I noticed last year was a $9,900 grant. This year it's going to, for 2013, is going to be $21,000. Could you kind of expand on what the Vector grant is?
The Vector grant, as I believe it is largely the effect of the West Nile. I'm glad you asked about that one, because we have talked about that one openly. A lot of the grants that the district secures in our behalf are grants that they have gotten for themselves that they then piggyback us onto. But the West Nile is something that has been front and center in our discussions. We actually stepped up a level of funding this year compared to last because we had cases. And the way that, that grant is scored is if you actually have individuals who catch West Nile within your district, you're actually given an additional funding, a significant additional funding. So you have the levels of surveillance are involved in the percentage of positive mosquito or positive vectors. So they look at mosquito counts in water sources. They look at dead birds, and they look at people. And we had a people case, and so that's largely, I believe, is in, why that went up so much.
Very good. It, my second question is concerning the child dental access program. Are we stable at the amount of children that are being served? Are we turning any children back? And the lack of $10,000 of funding from two previous years, are private donations making that up? I guess that's more one question.
Well, that's probably a question that is most fully answered by the contractor themselves. However, there is no question that our cutback in funding is resulting in a cutback in services. And no, private donations are not making up the difference. The Smile Healthy organization had numerous discussions with us. This was a very hotly, frankly, hotly politically debated item on the board for this, the entire existence of this grant. There's basically been strong support for this on the county board, so that's why it, you still see it in our budget. And I would just give you my thought as a board member and also as, frankly, a public health and medical professional with respect to the activity. My thought had always been that it was untenable to fund dental health services for the poor out of general operating revenues when every one of these children is available, has had at that time available funding to Medicaid. Every one of these kids was covered on Medicaid, and however, we couldn't get dentists to work for Medicaid reimbursement. And so the model that was developed was basically to support or to reimburse, subsidize dentists to provide these services for about twice the Medicaid rate by using, in some cases, grants, but for the most part, general operating revenue. And that's how the program started. Some 5 years back, I made the suggestion that the agency that could do this best was Francis Nelson or the Public Health District. And the reason that Francis Nelson could potentially do it best is that their level of reimbursement from Medicaid is three times that of private office physician or their dentist because of the federally qualified services that that designation. So it seemed to me that if we could get Francis Nelson to provide this service, Smile Healthy could certainly be the contractor with it, that we could put together a more viable function. Also, public health was potentially able to do this because of the economies of scale of an organization that would be dedicated to it, seeing a lot of people and having a dedicated staff. That's basically the direction that, that Smile Healthy has gone in at this point. They now are very very much involved in planning with respect to Francis Nelson Health Center, and some of the original board members of Smile Healthy are now looking at becoming the governing board and the operating group for Francis Nelson Health Center. So I think we may find a more viable model with the directions that Smile Healthy is taking.
John, thanks for your service and your dedication to this.
Thank you.
Board, thanks.
Any other questions? Mark, motion to set the place on file. Mr. Kurtz, second by Mr. James. All
thank you.
Favor.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
Next up, Children's Advocacy Center.
Good evening. My name is Mark Williams, and I'm the Executive Director of the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center. I was here in April to talk with you about the operations of the Children's Advocacy Center, so I got to meet most of you then, but I'm happy to be here again tonight. As you know, the Children's Advocacy Center is an organization that is devoted to working with a very specialized population of child abuse victims, and those are children who are suspected of either being sexually abused or seriously physically abused. So we bring together all of the different agencies, the multidisciplinary team, to make sure that we have the best possible response and best possible intervention in cases of suspected child abuse, whether in particular those two types of child abuse, sexual abuse and serious physical abuse. We see about 175 to 200 children per year at the Children's Advocacy Center. Just to remind you, we are located at 1601 West Canyon Road in Champaign. We're in the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District facility. We rent space from them. We have been in that facility for just under 5 years now. So we do see about 175 to 200 children per year at the center. We are governed by a 14-member governing board, as you see here on in your budget summary information. We have a governing board, and then we have a very small staff. It's myself as the executive director, and Elaine Mitchell is our case manager. Just some highlights on the budget. We have three primary revenue streams. We have grants. We have several different grants that are a combination of federal, state, and local grants. We also have contributions from law enforcement agencies that use the Children's Advocacy Center, and we do some fundraising and have some donations coming in. The center's primary funders are the Champaign County Mental Health Board, the Illinois Attorney General, the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, and the National Children's Alliance. We're very fortunate at this point that all of our grant revenue is very stable. We did see a 1% reduction in our FY13 grant from the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. We were expecting to see a reduction in our grant from the Illinois Attorney General based on what has happened the last 2 years. We had a 10% cut in that grant last year and a 5% cut the year before, so I was pleasantly surprised when I opened our grant agreement 2 weeks ago and found out that our grant funding had been kept level for FY2013 from the Attorney General's office, so we're very grateful for that. We do also receive about $6,000 to $7,000 per year in contributions from the law enforcement agencies that use the Children's Advocacy Center. They make voluntary payments to the center based on their pro rata usage of the center, the number of children that they're interviewing there. We also are engaged in an annual fundraiser. I talked with you quite a bit about that. When I was here in April, we do an annual Champions for Children walk. We partner with the local Twin Cities Twosome, and it's a walk that's held in Crystal Lake Park, typically on the second week of second Saturday in April. We've also been the beneficiary of a third-party fundraiser for the last couple of years. So it's a small fundraiser, but it's very important to us, and it does, in addition to the funds that it brings in, it helps raise awareness about what we're doing in the community. I will say that in the budget that you have in front of you for County FY 2013, we are projecting a slight deficit. That deficit is under 2%. The deficit is primarily because of the fact that during 2013, the center will be reaccredited, going through reaccreditation by the National Children's Alliance. We were initially accredited by the National Children's Alliance in 2002, and then we go through reaccreditation every 5 years. They were here for a site visit in 2008, and they will be coming back for a site visit to evaluate the Children's Advocacy Center in 2013. And as a part of that process, we will be paying a $3,000 reaccreditation fee. So that is primarily where the slight deficit in this budget comes from. We are projecting revenue of just over $191,000 per year. Again, our revenue sources are very stable for this year. Our expenditures are expected to be around 100. $594,000. Our largest single expenditure other than personnel, as you can see, is for professional services. In that line item, we have $43,000 budgeted for FY 2013. That money is money that comes to the Children's Advocacy Center through the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority. It's actually a federal grant. It's Victims of Crime Act money, federal funds that come to the state of Illinois, and then the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority is the pass-through agency for that funding. We use that funding to contract with two licensed therapists here in Champaign to provide crisis intervention counseling services to all of the children and families who come to the Children's Advocacy Center. Because of this grant, we're able to provide that service completely free of charge to all of the clients at the Children's Advocacy Center. Our next largest expenditure is a little over $18,000 per year for rent and utilities. As I mentioned before, we rent our facility from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. We're not anticipating any notable changes in FY 2013 that would affect the operations of the center. We're not anticipating any additions in staff, certainly no subtractions in staff. Hopefully we're going to remain steady. My long-range goal for the Children's Advocacy Center, and it's something that the board continues to discuss, if we can ever identify a sufficient, stable, renewable source of income to provide funding for a full-time forensic interviewer, that is something that we would like to add, although at this point that funding doesn't appear to be out there, and until it does become available, that's not something that we want to do, because it's certainly a service that once you begin providing full-time forensic interviewing, you can't withdraw that, you know, if you don't raise enough money at your walk or, you know, at your poker run or whatever else you might be doing. So, again, we're in order to do that, we would have to have a renewable source of income for that. Just real briefly on the Children's Advocacy Center fund balance. The fund balance hovers right around $30,000, and that money is primarily unrestricted revenue that we have brought in over the past several years through fundraisers, through the Champions for Children Walk, other fundraisers, some accumulated interest, and donations that have come to the Children's Advocacy Center that have not been otherwise designated. We keep that money in the fund balance, which allows us to weather those times when the payments from the state of Illinois, the Illinois Attorney General, DCFS, when those payments don't come in as expected. The fact that we have that money in our fund balance allows us to maintain a positive cash balance, even though we're waiting for reimbursement from the state for expenses that we have. The last thing that I wanted to touch upon before, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have, when I was looking over the county strategic plan, I noted that, you know, the county in their strategic plan they're promoting a safe and healthy community, and I think what we do at the Children's Advocacy Center, working with these children who have been sexually abused and seriously physically abused, and working with their families to make sure that they have the resources that they need, and that the cases are investigated properly, and that all of the members of the multidisciplinary team are working in a collaborative effort to intervene in these types of cases. I can't imagine anything more important for a safe and healthy community than that.
Questions? Mr. James.
Mike, in regards to your rent, that includes utilities with that rent?
That does. Our rent is right around $1,400 per month, and our utilities run around $140. So
how's that compare to that?
Quite a deal.
How does that compare to that building you used to be in that was tore down to make way for the highway department?
We are paying probably, it's not, I don't know exactly how much more, but when we moved from the facility that was at 1601 East Main Street, we looked at several different options around the community, and then Mr. Weibel, who was on the Public Health District Board, let us know that they had space available to there, and the rent was almost exactly what we were paying at 1601 East Main Street. Now, over the years, we have a renewable lease with the Public Health District, so we do have periodic increases in our rent and our utilities, but they have been very, very minimal. They're tied to increases increases in the consumer price index, so our rent and utilities have increased 2 to 3% over the last few years.
And then one last other question. I know that from time to time you're going to be needing some office equipment and stuff, but there's nothing in your budget at all for that?
Right. We don't have anything specifically in the budget for that. Again, since we do have the fund balance, that if we had something, for instance, go wrong with our recording system, which is about a $5,000 to $6,000 system, we do have the money in the fund balance that we would be able to use for that. But the grants that we have are fully expended either on salaries or fringe benefits or for the general operating expenses of the Senate.
But is there times possibly a grant would come up to help with new equipment and computers and stuff?
Yes. Okay. Yes, and we continue to watch for those, just like we watch for any money that's available out there that can help us with the services that we're providing. Yes.
Hi there. Just had a more of my curiosity and my naivety, but we talk about how the state doesn't pay its bills on time, and I noticed that you get a relatively sizable amount of money from Champaign County Mental Health Board. Mm-hmm. How have they been in terms of paying their bills?
They are our best funder. They pay on time. So okay. They pay in advance. We receive a monthly payment from them. It's always on time.
Thank you.
So, yeah, it's terrific. I will say the Champaign County Mental Health Board has been a supporter of the Children's Advocacy Center from the very, very beginning. Not only have they continued to provide the ongoing support for the Children's Advocacy Center, they were there for us at the very beginning with a large amount of funding that was used to remodel the former youth detention center for the first permanent home for the center.
Ms. Petrie.
Since you have a friend to give you on your wish list, what is your expectation that it would cost you annually?
When I look around the country at different centers that have forensic interviewers, there's a pretty wide range, but I would say just on average, most forensic interviewers are making about in the $40,000 to $50,000 per year range, plus fringe benefits, of course.
Any other questions?
Oh, Mr. Ellis. The Champaign County Mental Health Board funding that you get,
mm-hmm.
is that, do we know where that comes from? Is that from the mental health tax levy?
Yes, it comes through the Champaign County Mental Health Board. Peter Tracy's department. It's a competitive grant situation. We apply for grant funding through them each year and go through that process.
As far as we know, it's money that they get from their tax levy, as opposed to grant,
it's
a specific grant or something.
That is correct. Okay. Yes, it is. It is money that they have that they distribute through
the tax levy.
Sure.
Other questions? All right. Accept place on file. So moved by Mr. Conant, second by Mr. Langenheim. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Next up is animal control.
Just before we start, make sure and use the pages that were at your desk tonight, not the ones that were originally in your book for animal control.
Good evening. I'm Stephanie Jost. I'm the director of animal control for Champaign County. And my budget's pretty easy, so hopefully we'll be able to breeze right through it. So last fiscal year for 2011-2012, Deb and I decided that it would be in the best interest of Animal Control Department to split up the budget into three separate categories, one being administrative, the other being animal control services, and the third being animal impoundment services. And we made this decision based on the fact that we have three very distinct jobs at Animal Control. One is the registration requirement for all dogs and cats, and the administrative part of that is a line 091-047. That's where we primarily do the registrations, the administrative part of it. The animal control services, we provide the animal control services for 22 villages, the city, and the city of Champaign. We have three animal control officers that provide that service, and we have intergovernmental agreements with all of those villages and city in the city of Champaign. The villages are charged $39.76 an hour. That's based on our costs for service up until this point. And then the city of Champaign pays one lump sum based on their costs for services as well. Their costs are based on an hourly rate per week rather than per hour that we provide the service. And then the third, 091-248, is the animal impound services. We provide the animal impound services for the entire county with the exception of the village of Bonneville and Homer. Those two villages do not have a contract for service or impoundment, but we provide the impoundment services for Rantoul and Urbana, although we don't provide the services for those two villages and city, for the those two cities. We impound approximately 2,000 animals a year. That number stays about the same, give or take a couple hundred animals per year. So when you look at our budget, we always kind of project high on our expenses, and that's based on the fact that we don't know year to year how many animals we'll be impounding, and so there's some cost shifts there that we want to be able to control, have the money for if they come up. However, we have always come in within budget for the last 5 years that we have had, or I'm sorry, 7 years that the facility has been open. Our main sources of revenue are the registration for the the registration of dogs and cats, and then also with the intergovernmental agreements. Those are really the only two sources of revenue that the Animal Control Department has.
Any questions about your favorite pets? Mr. Hawks.
I'm sorry, you went through this real quick. Who doesn't have contract rules for control, and who doesn't have contract rules for power?
We don't provide the animal control services for the city of Urbana, the village of Rantoul. They have their own animal control officers, but they do impound their animals at our facility. We don't provide service or impoundment services for Homer or Bonneville.
Do we know what they do?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
You don't know enough to know why they wouldn't contract with us?
Well, the village of Bonneville has never opted to have a contract with us. I'm guessing it's a funding issue. You know, a lot of these littler villages have a hard time paying the $39.76 for service. The village of Homer, we actually didn't renew their contract or their intergovernmental agreement because they were not paying their bills.
And do your calls for service directly come through NCIS or only from other law?
It depends on the village. Some villages, the citizen has to contact their police department or village, and then that entity contacts us for service. The city of Champaign, Posodum, those village, or the city of Champaign and the village of Posodum, for example, the citizens can call directly to MetCAD or to our office for service. And I know them all by heart, but I'm not sure that you're really interested in all 22.
No, that's fine. I was just curious to understand, I guess, how well you feel other county agencies are working with you to get the calls for service to you. I mean, is this something that could use improvement at a countywide level as something that should be on the agenda to talk to MetCAD about, or to talk to local law enforcement agencies about, or do you feel like you've got it under control?
I think it works fairly well. It gets a little complicated, like the village of Ludlow. For example, they have an officer on duty sometimes, and sometimes they don't.
Right.
And so, but their contract or their intergovernmental departmental agreement very specifically says that it has to go through the village or police department before we can respond. And so it gets a little complicated, but we only go there maybe 10 times a year tops. So it's not a huge...
You're not wasting a lot of your staff's time on wild goose, cat, dog, whatever to be chases when you're not supposed to be there.
Okay. No.
Thank you.
Mr. James.
Stephanie, I know in the past, when I'm looking through your budget here, and I always ask this, but I don't see anything in here for future upgrades or any equipment that you may need, because I know previously there had been some money that was in the nursing home budget that went to help with your air conditioning over there, and that's been several years ago, and then at that time we talked about that eventually you would be setting money aside into a fund to help cover those costs. I do see where you're buying a relatively nice Cadillac there. No, I'm teasing. But I'm just curious because I get a little remiss that we always see these budgets and we look at them, and I know that money's tight, but we're not putting anything aside, because I know, like anything else, that, you know, if your equipment goes down, basically for those animals, you got to have it up and running. So,
well,
is there any contingency fund of any kind?
I think I'll start with Jay. That sort of reflects the county as a whole.
Well, I understand that, but
she
raises some of her own in-house revenue and different things she has coming in. And I know what that's the thing I hear, everything county as a whole, but somewhere, somehow, somebody's got to step up the plate and say, well, you know what, I've just got to start plugging some numbers in where I can. I mean, maybe you got to cut down on conferences and training. Maybe you got to cut back on some other things that you can cut back on, but we're not putting anything in there. And then, like, just like, if I may, when we get an emergency work order for a roof or anything else, we're going to general corp all the time. And we've talked about this, you have to come up somehow with a solution. It's just talk at this point, and then I always, every year, hear the same thing about the budgets.
Well, I respect what you're saying, and the Animal Control Department is kind of a difficult department to budget, because we make exactly what we spend. I mean, trust me, if there was any way I could save money, I would be doing it. I mean, this is bare bones. There's 9 employees. We handle 2,000 animals compared to, just kind of give you an example, the Humane Society has a staff of 50 people to handle the exact same number of animals, plus hundreds of volunteers. So our facility is running as efficiently and as cost-effectively as we can to provide the service that we're required. We could increase the cost of services to these villages, but I think we would lose the intergovernmental agreements because they're also in tight budget constraints as well.
Not to interrupt you, and I appreciate that you're doing a good job and have all those numbers, but I also know that there was a resolution passed or an ordinance passed granting you more fee money, and I see where that's going to be coming in. To me, if I'm raising my fees, I'm raising it to offset some other costs, and, you know, I'm just a firm believer that you've got to put something aside. There's going to be a rainy day, and whether it's a line item that can be funded or not, I never see anything but zeros.
Yeah, and I am working very hard at trying to do that, but we had to purchase a new van because
next year that money can be put in for others?
Perhaps. I mean, I can't sit here and guarantee, because as soon as I say yes, we'll be able to save $40,000, you know, the air handling system will break and we'll have to fix it. So I can assure you that I will do everything in my power to make sure that we are planning for a rainy day, that we are trying to build up that fund balance. I mean, I recognize that it's a problem, but I don't have the power to really correct it at this point, because we're just really working within the confines that we have.
And how long has this been up and running now, 12 years?
Since 2005,
okay,
July.
So I'm just, like I said, look at the age of that building, look at the things that are coming down the road. So.
Sure.
Okay.
Other questions? Do you motion to set this on file? Moved by Mr. Scherer, seconded by Mr. Gonzalez. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Last but not least is the highway budget. Where's Jeff Lee? wrote that list in a traditional handout to Senator Dust called County Bridge Fund. Did you get out? Is it updated?
Yeah, updated.
This is an update of what's in the book.
Good evening. Joe Weibel said, it's this, whatever color that is, thing on your desk. And I'm just going to try to do the best I can in the amount of time that we have here to give you a broad scope of the Highway Department and all the funds. And obviously, after that, I'll open it up to questions. I don't want to answer give you a bunch of information that you don't really need and then take up all the time and not have time for questions and answers. So this usually only takes me a couple hours, right, Brendan? Okay, just starting, we'll just go through the book here. Our highway road chart, we currently have 20 employees at the County Highway Department. We had 11 maintenance employees as of about 3 or 4 years ago. We've had a couple retire and have chosen, at least for the time being, not to replace those maintenance employees, which are basically the truck drivers and the guys that work on the roads. Our engineering staff has stayed stable. Clerical staff has stayed stable over that same period of time. If you go on to page 2, the County Highway Department is funded by a number of different funds. The Highway Fund is derived from property taxes. You'll see there that number is about $2.1 million in 2013. And we've had discussions about the Highway Fund and what it can and can't fund when we've gone through those discussions about fringe road agreements and fringe roads. But basically, it can only be used on county highways and for purposes to maintain county highways and for all the equipment and the vehicles and the buildings that we need to maintain in order to maintain those county highways, and to pay obviously for the personnel that we need to continue to maintain and upgrade our roads. The County Bridge Fund, again, is a levy dollar, about $1,056,000 this year. That money is specifically states in the statutes that we're supposed to use that money for meeting half the cost of bridges and culverts in a road district or on township roads first, and then once those obligations have been made, then we can use that money on county highway structures in order to rebuild and maintain those. County motor fuel tax, there's an actual breakdown that shows you exactly where motor fuel tax comes from and how we get our proportionate share. But basically, our motor fuel tax comes from when you guys put fuel in your cars, and a portion of that ends up back into Champaign County, although not as big a portion as we would like. The motor fuel tax fund has actually, from a revenue standpoint, declined over the last 5 years. We're not getting as much back out of the motor fuel tax fund as we did when I first got here back in 2005. But the state is actually infusing some money into the motor fuel tax fund through their Illinois Jobs Now money. So basically, when you look at the revenue stream and you see the revenues in the top, it's been zero increase basically for 5 years. And the only reason we're staying at that zero increase is because of that 17% infusion into the MFT fund. So once that's gone, which it will be in a couple of years, we're back down to, right now, our MFT would be about $2.4 million versus $2,750,000. So you can see. They'll tell you there's different reasons why people are driving less. I don't believe that's all true. I think the state's taking more money off the top, and that's where it's going. And we don't know where it's going. We've asked. We've had the Illinois Association of County Engineers with the director of transportation or the secretary of transportation for the state of Illinois, but they change that hat so often that there's nobody there that can even really tell you where that money's going. And we keep asking, and they keep saying, well, it goes here and it goes there, and it gets funneled off to this and that. So it's difficult to track, and they make it that way, I think, on purpose, so that we can't figure out where that monies are going. Moving on to page four, as you know, there's the township road districts are semi-quasi, I guess, under my direction, although they like to think they're independent, and oftentimes they are more independent than they need to be sometimes because they get themselves in trouble, but all of their monies, their motor fuel tax funds, do come through the county highway department as well as the township bridge program. They have to set up programs for their money, for their oil and their rock and whatever else they're spending their money on, and those have to be approved by my office as well as sent down to Paris to the IDOT office in order to be approved by Illinois Department of Transportation as well. And you'll see there on page 5 the different township valuations and the different miles. You know, townships on average 50 to 60 miles of roadway per township, and you'll see the valuations vary tremendously, which obviously equates to more or less money in those townships and their ability to have better roads than others. So if you move on to the County Highway Fund, Fund 083, here's some highlights of that. $2.1 million in property taxes you'll see there. That's basically 80% of our revenue sources. The majority of the revenue that we get outside of county property taxes is money that is actually transferred from the motor fuel tax fund. You'll see material and equipment use, county MFT on line 34371, engineering fees, townships and villages, engineering fees, county MFT, and engineering fees, township MFT. Those are basically all transfers from the motor fuel tax fund to the county highway fund in order to keep our revenues up so that we can continue to operate and do the things that we need to do. That MFT from the townships is basically 4% of the total MFT that the townships bring in, and we get that money for basically administering their program on their behalf. And the other stuff is monies where we send an engineer out on a job that's funded by motor fuel tax funds. We turn that into the motor fuel tax account, and the account pays the money over to the highway fund. Same with our equipment. When we go out to plow roads or haul rock or do any of that kind of work, we can bill the equipment hours based on a use hour that IDOT tells us we can use as far as dollars per hour, and we can bill that from the motor fuel tax fund over to the highway fund. Couple of revenues that were in the 012 in the projected but not in the 2013 budget. We did get some money from the wind farm development in 2012, and you'll see that we got some money from the ICC and railroad crossing funds, and those were actually for township projects where we fronted the money for those projects in 2012. Moving on to next page, page 8. Just a couple of things that have entered into the highway fund over the last couple of years is the Social Security for Employer. Administrative Services had been funding that for, I guess, forever until 2011, and the County Highway Department is beginning to pick that up, and actually in 2012 and 2013 is fully funding Social Security for our employees. And there is an IMRF early retirement obligation that the Highway Department is still paying off at this time for some of our early retirees back before I was here. that is going to sunset here in the next year or so. And then Deb and I have talked about the IMRF employer cost that Administrative Services is currently paying out of the general corporate fund being phased into the highway fund. So there's some expenses there that are being phased into our personnel line items over time. But you'll see a big majority of our expenses are in personnel, $1.7 million in personnel, even though we have not replaced the two highway maintenance people that retired. We're still, we're not growing tremendously in personnel because of that, but we're holding at that $1.7 million number. All of our commodities, that stuff that we need to operate on a day-to-day basis, you can see the biggest one, obviously, is gasoline and oil. To run the trucks around and plow the snow and do all the work that we need to do. Obviously, diesel is included in that, even though it says gasoline and oil, but that is the major expenditure on our commodity side. And then we've got our services, which range from anything from, insurance that we have to pay for our building and our vehicles at $62,000, electric services for our building. Heavy equipment maintenance is a big one, which is tough for us to project from year to year how much we're going to have to do work on our equipment and how many parts and how many so forth we're going to need in order to keep our equipment up and running. We do have some money in there, Mr. James, for highway facility repair and maintenance. You'll note that, so that's good. We're trying to do the best we can to keep that beautiful building that we built when the CAC had to move and keep that in good condition. Some other notables in there. We do have janitorial service that we use through Administrative Services. We have a janitor that works in our building to keep it up and clean and so forth. Comes in the mornings, and we pay that money back to ASD. So that's kind of the highlights of our services. In our capital, when you look at 2013, we've got a very minimal amount there in road improvements, and the majority of it is in heavy equipment. And we've got eight plow routes. We've got numerous pieces of heavy equipment, which are enumerated on page 12. The majority of it is vehicles to transport people or vehicles to transport salt and rock. And we've got some larger pieces of equipment as well. But we try to keep everything to the best we can to about a 10-year rotation as far as vehicles go. It's not necessarily that we get so many miles on these trucks that they wear out. It's the corrosion that happens on these trucks from the massive amounts of salt that we haul around them and throw on the roads during the wintertime to keep the roads open. So we have switched over to stainless steel truck beds in order to try to make those last longer. We're hoping those will last through at least two and maybe three different trucks. So once we replace a truck that has a stainless steel bed, we'll pull the bed off, bring in the new body, and put that bed back on there. And we've got some larger pieces of equipment there. We've got inloaders and bobcats and some motor graders. You'll see they're getting up there in the 8 to 10 year range that are going to be need to be replaced here. We're trying to get through our trucks right now, trying to get those replaced, and here in the next year or two, we should get through those, and then we're going to be looking at trying to replace a motor grader or a wheel loader. But basically, you replace one of those in a given year, and that's your whole budget. That's $200,000 or plus just to replace one of those pieces of equipment. We're still paying off on the bond for our building, about $106,000 a year. So you'll see our expenditures of $2,674,000, just slightly more than our revenue. So we're trying to maintain a relatively balanced budget. Did go over some of the indicators, and a lot of these indicators on the highway fund, you'll see there aren't any in the motor fuel tax fund, because basically the highway fund and the motor fuel tax fund are used to basically fund roads. So we do some indicators based on our actual cost to do projects versus that of design and versus our construction based on the percent of award. We've been very, very lucky in the last couple, 3 years. The bidding climate in this area, although the economy has been in the tank, the bidding climate actually becomes much better when the economy goes in the tank, because you got a lot of contractors very hungry for work. They're competing very hard to get the work, and the prices come down. We had $74 asphalt this year, and I believe 3 years ago asphalt was up in the $90 to $95 per ton range. So that's a significant decrease in the overall cost of materials and work that we're doing. We do have some performance indicators based on our pavement management system as well, talking about pavement condition index of roads. We like to see that above 70 as a total. We're doing a pretty good job of keeping it around 72, 73, and we're climbing. That's due basically in large part to the fact that we've got some really old roads that we're redoing the surface on, and that's putting our pavement condition index up. So our PCI greater than 60 there, an indicator number 6, you know, is climbing from 85 to 87 to 88. So we think those that we're going in a positive direction as far as those indicators go with our pavement management system. Yes, sir.
The number of days of freeze in a slow condition, who decides that?
We go out on the National Weather Service, or that's reported out of the airport.
Okay.
And pulled off of there.
Not what you see at your windows.
No, 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 nope. And that's going to vary. I mean, we actually read the... try to read the weather service and the temperatures, and it may be, somebody, you might think it was 82 and I might think it's 78, but you know, so there could be a little differentiation there. The County Bridge Fund, there's a couple of new sheets. Yes.
On the highway. How many more years left do we have on the bond?
Deb, do you know that?
The reason I ask is because you have a stated goal of trying to get around $800,000 in the fund balance, and you're kind of breaking even, and I want to make sure that you can get to that point. So that's one of the big things that's right. Hanging over your head. What are some other ways we can get to that $800,000 besides this bond service that you can think of? What happens if we're well below $800,000, which is where we are today? What sort of issues can occur if we stay well below that $800,000?
Well, we have issues, and everybody's been talking about it. I mean, you can look at, like we did those railroad projects in 2011, 2012 on behalf of the townships. We had to front all that money. That was about a $300,000 front on our behalf, and we're finally, you know, we get the money back a year or 2 years later. So I don't think it's not necessarily that we're going to have a road, you know, catastrophically fail and we're not going to be able to go out there and fix it. But there are programs such as the railroad program. We had our sign-up grade program where we have to front all the money. And if we don't have the money to front, we're not going to be able to take advantage of those programs. And oftentimes those are $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 that we got to put up in front. When we did our massive sign replacement program here a couple of years ago, that was a huge undertaking. It was all federal money through IDOT. We had to not only front the money for the county, but for all the townships as well, and then we had to wait until the state did all the inspections before we got the money back. So those kind of opportunities we don't want to let slip away just because we don't have any money in our fund to be able to front it.
For fiscal year 5 more years. Okay. So for fiscal year 2013, do you foresee any of these projects or programs coming down the pipe that you're going to have to forego because of the lack of a fund balance? Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Nope, I don't. Any other quick questions? Yeah.
Mr. Schreiber.
Thanks. Two points. One, the windmill towers.
Yep.
All the funds from the windmills ended up in the county highway fund?
No.
Not all.
This is just through the road use agreement.
Correct, road use agreement.
Yeah.
Did you negotiate that?
Yes.
Windmill companies?
Okay. Yes.
Did you get the same as the township road commissioners?
I think they did a little bit better than I did because their roads are a lot worse. I mean, they went on one road of ours for a mile and a half, and we got $137,000. I thought we...
Straight road, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. The other point I want to make, too, is it's more of a point of the question is, on your equipment replacement, now I'm going to speak generally on the 10-wheel trucks, the 10-wheelers and the single-axle trucks.
Yep.
You know, you got a shop over there. It's the envy of the county.
Right.
And I'm not going to tell you how you run the highway department, Jeff, but if I were you, knowing what I found out from my trucking friends with the new technology in these diesel engines, they get half the fuel economy. The parts are over twice as much as the old parts were in these machines. They're half as usable as these old machines are. And if I might make a suggestion that since you do have the shop you do, you might go over and steal some, not literally speaking, but go grab some kids from the Parkland Diesel Tech program, get them over there, and make your own gliders out of those trucks, because it's only going to get worse. The inflation on these new vehicles are out of sight, and I think, my opinion again, might be money ahead to just strip these down to the chassis, rebuild everything. Prime him, prime or repaint them, put them back out in the roads. I think he might be money ahead. That's just my opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Gary.
I'd like to speak in generalities about the trend of the budget in the county highway department. It looks to me like we may be heading in the wrong direction as far as our ability to maintain services in the future. And we need to either find some more sources of revenue or try to work with what we have. I am concerned about the Social Security cost that now is coming out of your budget. I realize that that Social Security now is part of the corporate fund budget. So I'm concerned about the possibility of funding the IMRF out of the county highway budget when it's now funded out of the corporate fund and has always been. I'm quite concerned. I see it's almost like the camel's nose under the tent with the IT services. So I'm quite concerned about that now being required out of the highway department. It hasn't been done in the past. And I'm sure IT is only going to grow. Legal services. We had $5,000 projected for 2012. Now it's going to be $10,000 in 2013. Basically, it's because of the problems that we're having in the corporate fund. And we realize that we do have problems in that. I'm sure we'll be looking at that. But our ability to meet our commitments with the highway department, the things that we've already committed ourselves to, the projects we have, and the ability to provide certain, like 24/7 service for snow removal and that sort of thing. These are the kind of things that we may not be able to continue funding unless we can either stop the drain on the highway budget or find some additional sources of revenue.
Thank you.
Mr. Alex.
There are a few things. Thanks for taking them in book order. On your township valuations, you identified four townships where there's a decrease in valuation 2 years in a row. Champaign and Urbana, I assume those are because of Urbana expenses are being up by the cities.
This sheet doesn't come from my department. It comes from, he's right. Okay.
That's what I hear from Doug. Do you have any idea what's going on with Bubba and Grant Tool?
Yeah.
Or Crush and Grant Tool. So just because of that, that's an actual problem.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm afraid of.
On page 8, yes, County Highway
highway fund, line 53320, insurance.
Mm-hmm.
What's that for?
That is to insure all of our equipment, our buildings. That comes from Debbie Manga. That's the number that she provides.
Okay, so that's,
to me.
That's money that goes to the county as participation in the self-insurance fund, or is that a separate set of policies?
Self-funded.
So it's part of the overall county self-insurance program.
Right.
On the pavement management system map, the PCI map,
mm-hmm.
Page 39.
Yep.
There's obviously a lot of county highways that aren't colored.
Mm-hmm.
Are these the only ones that we have?
The ones that are colored are the county highway system. The rest of them would be township roads.
Okay, sorry, I didn't realize there was the entirety of the system.
Yes.
For some reason, it looked more fragmented than I thought it was.
Nope, that's what we got to deal with.
The map also shows more than Champaign County, correct?
No, it's Champaign County.
Is it just county?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Now, those are the county highway. We have 200 miles of county highways.
Well, I learned something. I actually thought the network was a little more connected than that.
I wish it was for snow plowing purposes.
I understand it's the state where I made my error here is I'm leaving out. I'm not visualizing the state highways.
Right.
The state federal highways where they are. So
there you go.
Thank you. And yep. Then just one comment with regard to your distribution of the Illinois Motor Fuel Tax Fund.
Yeah.
I appreciated the drawing. It needs to show piles of money being set aside.
Yeah.
Various points throughout the map, but it seems reasonably accurate.
That drawing comes from IDOT, so it'll tell you, you know, what the source is.
I guess it's not entirely accurate, and if accurate the drawing can show you where that money you're wondering about is actually going.
Right.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, this question is spurred by Mr. Maxwell's commentary. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that Social Security and other items that are being transitioned into this budget are based on the employees that are in this area.
That's right.
And the IT components that are here are basically IT services that you request.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how the IT is. It just what we request, we pay for. We have to pay for our licenses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'd like to provide a little bit of clarification about the IMRF and Social Security. I discovered about 5 years ago that the Highway Fund was the only fund outside of General Corporate that was not paying IMRF and Social Security for its employees. So the Mental Health Fund pays for theirs, RPC pays for theirs, the Nursing Home pays for theirs. Even the smaller funds like Court Automation, if they have personnel, they pay the amount of IMRF and Social Security. And this became a problem about 2009-2010 when the General and by the way, they're not paid out of the General Corporate Fund. They're paid out of the IMRF Fund and the Social Security Fund, which have a revenue stream of property tax. And in 2009-2010, I don't know if y'all remember, but the IMRF rates went up about 34-35%. And that's when we started looking at this. The Highway Fund at that point didn't have to cut because property taxes are a primary source of revenue, which continued to increase while the revenue for the General Corporate Fund was going down by 10%. And on top of that, we had to come up with huge increases for IMRF. So that's when this came to our attention, and we decided, okay, we don't want to just sack it to the Highway Fund all at once, but we knew at that point that in fairness to all the other funds who pay their own Social Security and IMRF costs, that it didn't make sense that Highway wouldn't do the same thing.
Yeah, I'd like to say I think it's totally appropriate for each department to bear the burden of having employees and to reap the savings if they're holding off on filling positions. And if there's one fund that's not going that way, then it's an unfair situation. So I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, and the other part of it with IT services, you'll see this in some of the other special revenue funds as well. The General Corporate Fund pays for all the IT staff and all the services that are provided. And again, I mean, you know, General Corporate's been in dire straits.
And the auditor's office has always charged these special revenue funds for anything accounting related to help offset the cost of the general corporate fund. And so last year, we told all the special revenue funds for a year we're going to assess what IT services actually cost the general corporate fund to provide to you. And we did that throughout 2011 to allow a year for planning. But then in 2012, we're asking those funds to budget for the services that they receive from the employees and from the resources that are otherwise provided by the general corporate fund.
Anything else for Mr. Blue at this time? Mr. Garrett.
But we do, correct me again, we do have a separate levy for Social Security and IMRF.
That's correct, and it is to cover the costs for the general corporate fund employees. And it has always been that way, except that it was also covering the cost of highway employees. For some reason, I cannot tell you, because it was that way before I started doing this.
Just to follow up on that and add support to what Mr. Quisenberry said, I think it's appropriate that we account for the spending in the highway budget. I mean, whether or not that implies that we think it ought to be paid for out of, you know, motor fuel tax funds or highway funds or whatever, it is a different issue. I mean, even if we decided that the general corporate fund needed to contribute to some of these special revenue funds in order to generate the money required to pay for these, I think it's still better that we account for the total cost of employees in the budget for the group in which those employees work. I think it's better from a transparency standpoint for telling people what we're actually spending on a given county activity.
Go ahead.
Okay, we'll move on to the County Bridge Fund. And the two sheets, or I guess there's three sheets that Deb put on your desk. There was a typo in the fund balance that somebody had questioned about the fund balance, and Deb sent me an email, and they said there's something amiss there, and she found a typo that in that fund balance. Although the total number in the budgeted is correct, the 2011 actual was off by like a zero, which makes it a big number. So this again comes from county property tax. This is, as I said before, to fund 50% of township bridges if needed, and then used to fund county bridges as well. Basically, the revenues from this are all county bridge funds, except for some township reimbursements that we get back. We've lent money to some townships. Township comes to us, says, I need to build a $100,000 bridge, but I only got $20,000, and I know I got to pay $50,000. Can you lend me $30,000? And we make out an agreement, and over 5 years they pay us back, those kind of things. So there is some township reimbursement line item there. But our revenue total of about $1,075,000, and then basically we use that money to fund the township bridges as well as the county bridges. You will see that there is a rather sizable fund balance. We'd like to keep about $1 million in there, and we're at about $2 million. And what our plans are, and we've been working on this for a couple of years, I know. Maybe I'm being too nice to Mr. James tonight, but he's been harping on me about the Dewey Fisher Road for about 3 or 4 years. We've been working on a plan to use highway safety improvement money, truck access, route program money, state transportation rural money, motor fuel tax money, and county bridge money to fund what will probably be the biggest project that I'll do if we can pull it off. It'll be similar to what we did down on Monticello Road, where we widened shoulders, bought the ride well, redid the dishes, redid the roadways, and we're going to try to get all those different funds to come together. But there's a couple of bridges on the Dewey Fisher Road that are the old precast, pre-stressed type of bridges, and Gary knows what I'm talking about, and the rest of you guys are probably going, I don't know what he's talking about, but basically when you throw salt on those bridges, they corrode very quickly, and they're getting to the point where we can see that corrosion underneath the bridges. Remember what happened to the Kirby Bridge when we had the emergency to replace it? Trying to get ahead of the curve on these two. And they're big bridges. We're talking $1 million plus to replace both of them. There's no other monies that I can find in any kind of special fund that the feds or the state have to replace these two bridges. So we will do the Dewey Fisher Road, which I'm hoping we're going to do in 2014. Those bridges need to be replaced at the same time. We're talking about $1 million or so to do those. So we got that money kind of set aside in our fund balance in order to do that.
So we name one of the bridges after Stan James. So name one Stan, the other one James.
The Dewey folks are clapping as we speak.
Yeah. I can hear the clamoring from here.
Well, quick question on investment interest. Is that indicative of the money that you receive from interest from the townships that we loan money to, or do we not charge interest to those?
We don't charge them interest. That's CDs that we purchase.
Okay.
Or the treasurer purchases on our behalf. No, we're pretty nice to the townships. Yeah. Yeah. I hope that when you talk to your township highway commissioners, they don't throw me under the bus, because we really do try to work with them to the best of our ability to help them do road projects, bridge projects, anything that we can do to help them out. You'll see at the back of the county bridge fund is just kind of a synopsis of the projects that we're completing in 2012 to date. There may be a couple of other small ones that end up on that list if we get some more requests from the Township Highway Commissioners. And then you'll see what our projected projects are for 2013. We have a large bridge up on County Road 22 north of Penfield that needs to be replaced. The Posodum Bridge, which is a federal aid job down on County Road 16. And then we got a couple of township bridges. Those are our major projects as far as expenditures go for our bridge program for 2013. So are there any questions about the bridge fund specifically that I can answer before we move on to MFT money?
Keep trucking.
All right, we'll keep trucking. Motor fuel tax funds, you can all see that wonderful chart that Mr. Alex talked about that shows you where the money comes from and how we get it. Like I said, $2,750,000 this year, but that's because of the infusion of the Illinois Jobs Now money. That's basically the majority of our revenue. The state reimburses part of my salary through a federal reimbursement deal that we get through the state, but about $2.8 million in total revenue. Personnel, we've got one personnel in the motor fuel tax funds, and then everything else is basically spent on maintaining our roads and bridges within the county. Now, the pavement management system that we began some 5 years ago or so is what we use in order to kind of set aside money and pick projects, and not only for construction but maintenance as well on the county highway system. I think we're doing a much better job over the last 5 years of maintaining our roads and not just waiting until they fall apart and then going and rebuilding them. We're trying to do seal coats, crack sealing, trying to keep our shoulders up, trying to do the preventive maintenance things that you all know, you know, you need to paint your house, because if you don't, your siding's going to rot and then you got to replace it. It's the same thing with roads. You got to keep them up. You can't just wait until they're dead dog tired and then replace them. So we do have a pretty healthy budget in 2013 for road and bridge maintenance. We got $650,000. We found a source to get that wonderful shiny black material that we used about 3 or 4 years ago on the roads, that border side material. We're going to try to get out and do somewhere between 20 and 25 miles of seal coat on our county roads this coming summer. So that's why you see such a large number in that road and bridge maintenance. Equipment rentals, that's money that goes directly back to the county highway fund. That's where that money comes from. And county engineering forces as well. That's money that's that transfer money from the motor fuel tax fund back to the highway fund. We've got not a huge amount of money in road improvements this year. We're looking at trying to do County Road 22, which those of you who get out there and see our roads, that's our only oil and chip road left on the county system. We want to We want to go in and tow it up and do a recycling process on that roadway, try to get some shape back into it, and hopefully come back in a few years like we did up on County Road 9 and possibly overlay that if funds are available. I do have a large amount of money in right-of-way, which is an anomaly to our budget in the motor fuel tax fund. That is for that Dewey Fisher Road project. You guys have probably heard, it's the road that goes from St. Thomas More up to Route 136. It's heavily traveled. It's very narrow. Shoulders are very narrow. The right-of-way is very narrow. That number is just basically projecting buying 10 feet of right-of-way on either side of the roadway in order to widen the slopes and widen the shoulders. And that's the number that you come up with for a budget on that. So our capital is only about $1.2 million. Total expenditures, $2.7 million. So we're basically, you know, $100,000 or so light on the expenditure side versus revenues. We do have a fund balance, and the majority of that fund balance came in as a result of we took over a county highway back, or a state highway, and made it a county highway back in about 2004 before I got here. And there was a pretty large sum of money that came to us that put a good fund balance into the highway or into the county motor fuel tax funds, but we've been slowly depleting that year after year after year. You know, a few hundred thousand dollars here and a few hundred thousand dollars there. We're down to about $3.5 million, and you know, obviously we got to continue to build roads, and you know, we'll eventually get down to a million, because it's inevitable that when that $350,000 of motor fuel tax money goes away, to where it's going in the state, and they don't re-up on the IGOM money, we're going to start seeing more expenditures and revenues if we're going to keep our roadways in the same shape that they're currently in and keep them above a PCI of 70 and do all the things that we're trying to do in, you know, in our targets. So there's some reading here, as we talked about, behind the motor fuel tax fund. It talks about how it's distributed. There's a copy of the letter that the governor sent Mr. Weibel telling us about that marvelous chunk of change that we got, $357,000. And then our pavement management system, which this is the report for 2012 that, you know, if you want to know more than most people know about roads, read through this thing and talk to Bill Babick. He's a genius beyond geniuses as far as pavement conditions go. But you'll see the map there that Mr. Alex was talking about back on page 39, which shows our PCI values. Green is good. Yellow's okay. Red is horrible. County Road 8 and County Road 30 there. We are doing that project as we speak to redo that roadway, so we'll have no more red roads left on our system. Of the yellow roads, the County Road 11, which goes east-west across there through Flatville, we really did that after they did this pavement management survey last time, so that one has been redone. The one up on the northeast part of the county, that's the County Road 22, the kind of orangish one that we're going to rebuild next year. So, and if we can get the Dewey Fisher Road done and then possibly get the Dewey Elliott Road done in 2015, we're gonna at least start getting caught up here on some of our pavements, and then we're going to have to go back and start the cycle all over again and start rehabbing the ones that are now green and blue, which will turn into yellow and orange.
This 32, is that the one in Gifford that you
yes.
talked about earlier?
Yes.
So that's being done this year anyway, right?
32 was done last year. We skipped Gifford and then went 2 miles north of Gifford. But we're going to come back to Gifford.
Go through the downtown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jared? Microphone?
Would you share with us, or could you, at this point in time, give us an estimate of how many acres you're going to need on that Dewey Fisher Road?
Right away.
What did I figure? I figured it at about $20,000 an acre, so you can look at the $400,000 figure and 20 acres or so.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
But if we get a condemnation, that number won't hold up. I can guarantee you that.
Jeff, I just had a question for you on the taxable auto allowance. Could you just explain to me what that is?
That's in motor fuel tax funds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is in my contract, has been since I got here. The county doesn't provide me with a vehicle or gas or insurance or anything. I drive my own vehicle, so that's a reimbursement for me driving my own vehicle for work-related all day, every day, basically.
Okay, and then since you have a work-related vehicle, the job-required travel expense, is that anything to do with explain that? So it's something
that would be airplanes, stuff that I can't drive.
Okay, and in conferences and training, so the airline fees are $5,000, and the conferences and training are another $5,000?
You'll see that a lot of that travel stuff, for some reason, they're always getting coded. It's all ended up in conference and training fees. It's not getting coded into the travel expenses. So I think it's like $4,600 this year for all that. And that includes all the travel as well. I'm not sure why it's not going to both line items, honestly.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Just a couple. This just for a history lesson. The state highway that we bought or given, was that the Foosland?
No, it was Homer, Sydney, that road that goes all the way from 45, goes over to Philo, and then goes to Sydney, and then goes to Homer.
Philo Blacktop, as it's called.
Yeah,
that was state maintained at one point.
Yes.
And not numbered, right?
No, one of those unmarked state routes.
Okay, that was interesting. None of that. And then I wanted to follow that defiance. I guess the PCI map does go a few miles outside the county at each corner. Looking at it.
You can't escape the county.
You look at the county best mark. More longer than I have.
Thank you, Mr. Jerry.
I just would like to make a comment that I'd like for my colleagues to all look at page 77 very carefully and see where the municipalities that think that they're entitled to our motor fuel tax, where they come in up there at 49.10%, and the townships and the counties are both down there at the bottom.
What page is that?
Well, I think it's 70-something, but I can't read the pages.
27.
My point being is that we've argued for a long time that that money is intended to be used on county and township roads, and we continue to use it on fringe roads when, in fact, you just made the case for me that it's going to be enough to do all that anymore. So we need to seriously consider rescinding that resolution that we adopted back there whenever you done it.
And it wouldn't be a budget hearing unless we heard that from you, Mr. Jay, and I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Well, there's only one project left that's actually in the fringe road agreement. That's that final road job.
Then become null and void, I guess.
Yeah. So.
All right, any other questions? See, none of the motion to accept this on file. So moved. Kurt, second by Mr. Meinheim. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
And with that, we have completed the presentations for tonight, so we are adjourned.